the number one rock song of the week on the Sideshow Countdown for 2 weeks in a row now. That's 3 Days Grace with The Good Life.
Next week, we are going to have Dirty Heads with Rome, whose song Lay Me Down is ripping up the charts. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you next week on the Sideshow Countdown.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast. Julene Jordan.
Peter.
Welcome. How you doing?
Thank you. Wonderful. Thanks.
You know, in our introduction.
How are you?
Good. I'm excellent.
Okay.
You know, in our introduction, it says Detroit's longest running talk show.
Yes.
This could be America's longest running talk show.
Let's do the research. Someone do
yeah.
the research.
Well, it was started in 1970. By a guy named Harvey Ovchinsky.
Yes.
What are we hearing here?
That's my laptop.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Because remember, the rule, no texting during the show.
No, never.
All right. Hey, if you're just joining us for the first time, this is a phone-in talk show. You know, hi, you're on the air, one of those things, and you give your opinions and we give ours. And, you know, we're not objective, just like you're not.
We're not?
Isn't that weird? I mean, everybody says, you're one-sided. And we, yeah, it's the side I believe
which,
in.
Yeah, it's our side.
Our
right.
side, yeah. And you can have your side. Or maybe agree with us.
Sure.
People say they
all sides welcome on this program.
Yeah, that is true. So you're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. We have a phone number. It's not toll-free, and we're heard around the world, so
yes.
it's difficult. You know, we haven't heard from people in foreign countries in a while.
We haven't.
No.
I know they're listening.
Jacob, are you still listening in Ulu?
Ulu, Finland.
Yeah.
You know, usually they just we hear from them when we talk about something that perhaps has to do with their country
yeah.
or Europe or something
podcasts.
Like that. Or podcasts, right.
Scott is listening in Sweden. He writes frequently.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, our number is 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And if you'd like to email us, it's a good address to remember when the lines are filled, which they are not right now, or if you're bashful. Short messages, please. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/nightcall. Friends are always wanted and welcome. And podcasts are available at noon on Mondays. Thank you, Jade, who does all of that. And Jade also answers the phones at 313-298-WRIF.
She does. It's more than that. It's called phone screening. So she gets all the info. And sometimes you yell at her. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Be
yeah.
nice. Jade
yeah.
rocks.
Yell at us.
Yeah.
We'll just
feel
hang up.
Feel free.
On. Yeah. She can't hang up on you. We can.
No, she will.
Yeah, she will.
She's not afraid. We've given her permission.
Actually, I would say she's tougher than us.
I agree.
But I don't think we're going to do the Tonys. The Tonys are the awards for the best play and all the stuff having to do with theater. This is not, a big theater audience.
Audience. No, yeah. But I must admit, don't tell anyone, I'm a Broadway ho. I love it.
I like plays, but I don't see them very frequently. For one thing, last time I was in New York, when was that? In April.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, $125 a ticket? Oh,
you need to know how to do it. There's a certain way to get them cheaper, do matinees, things like that, yeah.
Well, it's coming up. It's down to almost 0 hour, although we'll have another show before the United States Social Forum hits Detroit. 20,000 activists are expected to discuss what is happening in our country. What's wrong with it? What's right with it? How can we, the people, intervene to make it the vision of what we'd like to see? You know, the teabaggers, that small group of very loud people get all this publicity, and when they have, like, conferences, they have, like, 1,000 people. Well, we're expecting about 20,000 people on the other side of the spectrum to be here in Detroit, and I suspect that it's not going to get much coverage at all from the corporate media. But
I think it will get some from
some. but not much. Because there was one 2 years ago in Atlanta. And how many people heard reports of that? I didn't.
Right, yeah. But in Atlanta, hopefully, it was covered somewhat. Now, what is the website for that, Peter? Because I was curious if the whole schedule was on there, if they have other kinds of activities outside of it, you know?
They do. Because there is a registration fee. And some people have said, boo, I don't know if I can pay that. I mean, I think it's like $65 for 5 days. All right. Well, there's other things you can relate to. The United States Social Forum, which is, it's odd. Well, the slogan maybe is kind of sums it all up. Another world is possible. Another U.S. is necessary. In other words, great changes need to be made in this country. Does anybody not agree with that? I mean, conservatives want to conserve everything as is. That's why they call them conservatives. Or even go back, you know. Well, wouldn't it be bad to go back to the 1990s before Bush ruined everything?
True.
That would be okay. Maybe, I don't know if that makes me a conservative or not. The website is USSF, like in Frank, United States Social Forum, USSF2010.org. There are so many things happening. There is like 1,200 workshops. Workshops are essentially, well, most people know what those are. You go there and there's presenters.
There's panels.
And people are coming from all over the country, a lot of all over the world.
Expert-type people, yes.
It actually almost creates anxiety in me when I start looking at the schedule. Because, for instance, there is a friend of mine who I've interviewed, Fran Shore, who's a professor at Wayne State University.
Certainly.
And wrote a book recently about all of this. And so he is having a workshop on the wars that are draining our economy here, the Iraq and the Afghan war. And he looked, and there's 15 other anti-war panels at the same time he's
really?
Having his.
Oh, my gosh.
So it could be out of control. But there's something for everybody. There's a lot of what's called within this context cultural events, but most of it's music. The Heart Plaza is one of the venues, Cobo Hall also, and I'm sure that they can accommodate people who can't afford the hit to go in. But Detroit's expecting 20,000 activists to come. This is going to be an amazing week.
Those are the kind of people that I want to hang out with, too.
June 22nd to June 26th.
Let's converge.
Yeah, a lot of great musical acts are going to be there. And let me see. Is my website handy? It's Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. You can go there as well. And on there, it's written, this is it, a chance to be part of history. The U.S. Social Forum, June 26th. 26 in Detroit. Resistance and renewal starts in Detroit. If you're serious about not letting the elites of Washington and Wall Street or the loony right determine the future, the Social Forum may be a good place to start resistance and renewal. And if not here, where? And, I mean, there's other options. You know what I always say? You know, the other option is just thatching our roofs, admitting we're peasants, that we have absolutely zero control over our lives as to the quality of them, the future of it, our pensions, our pay scales, our rights, all of that. If you want to cede that over to the elites that run this society, well, maybe you should go buy some thatch.
Yeah.
Where does
you're
one buy
okay with that.
Where does one buy thatch?
I don't know. They may sell
what
it.
What is thatch?
They may sell it at Home Depot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Thatch may be just what? Straw? Isn't that what the peasants
yes,
have?
Yes, yes.
And, boy, do I don't know. If, where did I see this? The, I was looking for the crisis. Well, let's actually we can kind of combine these, and that is what more can we say about the Gulf oil spill? It is actually, as anybody who even gives a glancing look, getting worse and worse and worse. Now BP is deploying deep sea sensors to better measure the spill. Well, I'll tell
you. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah, their capacity to measure this catastrophic event that their greed and their carelessness and their flaunting of laws and common sense doesn't impress me very much.
No, not at all. I just heard something about how there's pressure building, so there's other leaks that are now spilling oil.
Well, I have a feeling I'm not going to say too many things that at least some of you haven't heard before, and that is that this could literally kill the Gulf. That means, like, everything dead. It means no marine life, no sea mammals.
And just think the repercussions on so many levels. Yeah. All the people who make their money out there. As remember Diane Wilson, the shrimper?
Sure.
Yeah. She's still at it. She's out there, by the way.
She is. Yeah. A lot of this is chickens coming home to roost. I think this is unusual. I read this this little factoid both in, what's his name? Not Andrew. Why can't I think of his name? Pal, Alexander Coburn.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Alexander Coburn. You always look him up. It looks like it's spelled C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N, which sounds like
cockadoodle, too.
Yeah, right. Not like something that could happen to you on the rug. Should we move on?
Let's move on.
Yeah. And his he writes, in fact, I think it's up there now, the essay I was talking about, at counterpunch.org. But this comes from buzzflash.org, and it's Bill Berkowitz. He writes, Reagan's legacy of deregulation goes haywire in the Gulf. And that's essentially it. This is one of the chickens that came home to roost. Is the Republicans got the idea? Even, you know, Ray, it's interesting. Reagan wasn't a big fan of this, but went along for the ride, as he went along with so many rides. I mean, he certainly was a corporatist, certainly just in bed with all the corporate people, given his history. Besides being a fink for the FBI, ratting out his fellow actors during the 1950s as well. I mean, he's been not a very admirable person. But anyway, that the 40th president of the United States decided that things would be done best by getting rid of regulations on corporations, because then that would allow the genius of the market to take over. And we all know that the genius of the market of the 19th century, how well, I guess the corporations did real well in the 19th century, but who really got screwed badly were all the people that worked for the corporations, and also things like the environment, because there were no environmental standards, no regulations having to do with food or anything having to do with that.
Free for all.
Yeah, it was a free for all, except it was sort of what is it? What's the thing? I can't remember, the war of all against all, something like that. Except it's not real fair, because the corporate guys, they got the guns and the money. So just like...
Oh, and they I'm sure God...
Yeah, on their side.
Yeah.
So during the period, like from 1880 to 1950, when ordinary working people had the temerity to try to organize into unions, that the corporations got cops and National Guard and strike breakers and private detective companies to shoot down, I don't know, about 400 workers killed just for the act of wanting to...
save their dough?
Yeah. Now, that's it. I mean, it's all about the M-O-N-E-Y.
It really is. It truly is.
Because
and that's
because you know, people always talk, you know, these conservatives are always talking about, you know, you're for the redistribution of wealth. Well, the conservatives have presided over the massive redistribution of wealth to the upside. They've taken the money that the ordinary working and middle-class person has made and enriched themselves and gorged themselves to the point where they have no capacity even to consume what they earn in the most lavish style imaginable. I'm going to read a little bit of how some of these people are living in our little Eat the Rich section. But so that was it. I mentioned this before. So they had all this extra money because when Bush started rolling back the taxes on the wealthy. So they went into speculative capital. They put it into the stock market and all these exotic instruments. So one of the things that the tax breaks for the rich did was to totally sink the economy. It was helped, of course, by the fact that Bush lied us into a couple of wars, and it's now up to $1 trillion. But here...
Yeah, not even just helped. That's putting it mildly. Yeah.
Now, here is the factoid, and here is how the chickens are coming home to roost. Now, the big... colonial and imperial nations of the 19th century, specifically like Britain and France and Germany at one point. Of course, they fought like a world war over that. I mean, who's going to split up the spoils of Africa and the Middle East? But the British owned pretty much all of the the Middle East, a few exceptions. And one of the things they did is they set up oil companies that were kept in power by these royalties, these royal governments, who, again, anybody that tried to mess around by getting decent wages or something like that would be immediately shot down, tortured by whatever. Yeah. So in 1952, there was a democratically elected government in Iran. A guy named Mohammad Mossadegh came in. He was a secularist. And he said, you know what? Britain is looting our country. It's taken all of the oil, and the company was called the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. So you know what we're doing, people? We are nationalizing your oil company. Because you know what? It's our oil. You are this foreign company, and you have forced upon us these economic circumstances that works to the detriment of the people of Iran. Well, of course, committed to democracy, as we know the United States and Britain are, they immediately engineered a coup and brought in the Shah of Iran, who was the Shah. I mean, it was like a joke. There hadn't been a Shah in I don't know how many years. And this guy ran a torture state that gave completely undemocratic, gave everything away to the companies. And then the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company reconstituted itself as the British Petroleum Company.
BP.
BP. Yeah. So that's what it's all about. So this is what happened. And also, so we got BP, and because of the United States backing the Shah of Iran to the point where I think it was in 1978 or so, is that Jimmy Carter, the great liberal, had the Shah at his digs for a New Year's Eve. That was like having
Jimmy did?
Yeah, Jimmy is way overrated, as far as I'm concerned. But I mean, like
maybe he regrets it.
Well, I hope so. It's like, but you know, having the Shah of Iran to your party is like having Hitler at your party. He's not as well known, but the amount of people that were killed, tortured, done in, I mean, really rivals anybody else in the Middle East. But he was our guy. I mean, one time, I mean, even Franklin Delano Roosevelt was told, let me see, I can't remember, the United States backed all of these horrid dictators throughout Central and South America beginning around 1900. And one of them said, I'm forgetting my history, but they said, somebody came to Roosevelt and said, this guy is a son of a bitch. And Roosevelt famously said, yeah, but he's our son of a bitch.
Oh, man.
Yeah, which means that that all of our son of a bitches throughout the world back our economic interests. And it's not even our. It's not like, I mean, because that has the ring of that we're all sharing in this wealth. I mean, there is a little to some extent, but mostly not. Because
there's a whole bunch of son of a bitches out there.
Yeah,
out there, too.
There are. Yeah. Isn't there that, what's the bad boys from Scotland? Who are they? Yeah, you're messing with a son of a bitch.
Oh, you mean Nazareth?
Nazareth, yeah. The bad boys from Scotland.
Right on.
Scotland, yeah. So, let's see. During the 1980 presidential campaign, the Heritage Foundation burst on to the national scene with the publication of Mandate for Leadership, a comprehensive set of policy recommendations, which became the intellectual underpinning for the Reagan Revolution. Heritage's blueprints included trickle-down economics. That means you make the rich richer, and then it's supposed to trickle down to us, which, of course, it never does. It's getting worse. A major emphasis on deregulation, can you say BP in the Gulf, and massive cutbacks in social programs. So this is why they want to, like, repeal Social Security. And, they never got over the New Deal of the 1930s. Well, let's see. What else do we have in the big oil file here? One of the things, by the way, Governor Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, that weasel who, well, he's running all around, I mean, the state, and he's saying, no moratorium on offshore drilling. He wants to keep offshore drilling. He says, look, this is
He doesn't care. He's a Republican.
That what?
He doesn't care.
Oh, well, he says he cares. He says there's jobs. I mean, you were talking.
I understand that part.
But you know what? This, again, is what I call capitalist blackmail. You can say, do you want a safe environment or do you want to lose your job? Mm. Huh. Well, let me see. So they don't
create different kinds of jobs. You know how governors are always promising to do that.
You're such a rad. This article on Yahoo News says, has the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico got you so mad you're ready to quit big oil? And they're talking about everything under the sun is made out of oil. All, you know, you say, well, you can go bike riding or walking. Well, your bike and your sneakers have petroleum products in it.
Well, sadly enough, I do ride my bike around our neighborhood, our area, because it's quite bikeable. And I drive a hybrid, so I feel a little better.
Okay.
Better than anyone who drives a Hummer.
Oil is in everything. Carpeting, furniture, computers, and clothing.
Right.
It's the most...
plastic, remember? You talked about oil and plastic.
Yeah. Where are we here? Toothpaste, shaving cream, lipstick, vitamin capsules. Petrochemicals are the glue of our modern lives, and even in glue as well. And because of that, petrochemicals are in our blood. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention tested humans for environmental chemicals and metals. It recorded 212 different chemical compounds in our blood systems.
Oh, my gosh.
More than 180 of them are products that started as natural gas or oil.
Well, Peter, I think it's time for me to go green, build a greenhouse off the grid, quit shaving, you know, become a, you know, just a real live hippie, not a pseudo hippie as I am now. because razors are made of plastic.
That is mine. Now, mine's all metal.
Yeah. What's going to happen to it later?
Later?
Where's it going? The landfill.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, but always we get that. A panel commissioned by Representative Barney Frank of Massachusetts is recommending nearly $1 trillion cuts to the Pentagon's budget during the next 10 years. I mean, we could cut half a trillion a year, easy. But this guy's, he seems rad, but still he's within the dominant consensus, right? So, but he's trying. So he wants to get $1 trillion, which would go a long way towards dealing with some of the problems that we have. But guess what? Everybody's going crazy. Everybody that is a contractor for the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Because, you know what? One of the things that these war industries have done is they put their facilities all over the country. So what happens is if you say, well, we're going to stop, let me see, one of the things, would include reducing the Navy's fleet to 230 ships instead of 313. Well, the shipbuilding lobby has gone crazy. And I'm sure, you know, you think it's all like conservative stuff. The unions, which are the shipbuilders, they're going to lose their jobs. So what do you want to do? Do you want to keep throwing our money down the rat hole of war spending? And do you want to keep preparing for war and having a national psychology that says we always have to be on a hair trigger alert because we have all these enemies out that we need hundreds and hundreds of ships and thousands of nuclear weapons because those great enemies that are women. Who are they?
Yeah, that's right. Who?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, they're not even there.
I need to think.
Yeah, they're not even there.
I'm really not coming up with anything.
Yeah. So, but you have to have this worldview and this worldview based a lot on paranoia to justify a military-industrial complex.
Yep.
And there are some jobs connected with it, but as I think it was even saying last week, it's capital-intensive. In other words, a lot of money is spent, a lot of profits are made, and it's not labor-intensive. So if you took the same amount of money, and for instance, if say all of our taxes were lowered by half of what is spent every year on the war budget, and we had that for consumer spending, hello, wouldn't that kind of fuel the economy a little more than some exotic plane like the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, which is absolutely and totally unnecessary?
Yeah.
But is...
Is this brand new, this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, there's the capitalist blackmail. Do you want to always be preparing for war? Do you always want to have our sons and daughters...
I feel like we're pretty damn prepared the way it is, don't you?
Yeah, it is. All right, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, you're listening to WRIF. We'd like to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF. I got some stuff I want to say. But, I don't know, Jade, are we not working too well? Because all I see is the subject matter. But we will go ahead with that. Open lines for you, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this and where are you calling from?
I feel like we're pretty damned.
Hey, well.
Turn your radio down.
All right.
they like what we said. See, we are entertaining,
Jim.
Peter.
Jim. Hey, Jim.
But
Yo, Jim.
Okay, I'm putting him on hold. Now he's gonna run to the phone. Hello, hello.
We'll come right back to you.
Yeah.
Just give yourself a moment to hear that.
I don't even know.
About 30 seconds ahead, aren't we?
You know who's on my S list? Bill Clinton. Now, he's never very high on it.
Billy C. What'd he do?
Well, he's done a lot of bad things.
You're not talking about that Oval Office blue dress thing.
Yes, I'm never getting over that. What was that? I can't remember. Monica Lewinsky. Where is she now? She did her purses.
She made handbags. I don't know. Who knows where Monica... She's probably hiding.
Yeah. She was making... Can I say this?
Wait.
I don't know.
You better check with me.
Yeah. I mean, they
she was making
almost,
what? Sex tapes?
Handbags.
Yes.
Out of...
I don't know what that is.
Leftover at a certain procedure at the male children at birth.
What?
Yeah, and they'd have these little change purses, and you kiss it, and it turns into a suitcase.
Where did you get that one? You hang with some sick individuals. Or you wrote it yourself. And then I don't know if I want to talk to you the rest of the night.
It's 11 o'clock. It's okay.
All right.
Anyways, here's what Bill did. I don't know if people were following this stuff, but the Democratic establishment wants to keep all these war horses in office, even though a lot of them vote like Republicans, like Arkansas Senator Blanche Lincoln. So the unions and people that thought, hey, Blanche Lincoln, the senator from Arkansas, votes just like a Republican, let's put up Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter, and because this guy's a real progressive. This guy really fights for the average person and doesn't vote like a Republican who the party of no, who when they vote for anything, they're voting for corporations. So there was this big primary, and old Bill started running ads saying, this is about using you and manipulating your votes. I mean, come on, man.
I mean, just throwing that out there as a fear tactic?
And she was saying, if there's any coherent base to the Democratic Party as opposed to, people that are just vote for it. I mean, I'm not disparaging any of you. You don't belong to a union. But where does this? She said... this race became bigger than me and bigger than Bill Halter. It became about whether or not the people of Arkansas, who are the great people, were going to continue to be hammered by special interest groups that simply wanted to manipulate them and their vote. Now, she is calling, special interest group, this is a code word that has always been used in the South for two groups. One, African Americans, and the other, unions.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an appeal to the prejudices of upper middle class white people, because
Peter, there you go again.
Yeah, because
long time ago.
They have their interests, like the unions. Let's stick with just the unions, like getting decent wages and benefits and a program
for
everybody.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, who coherently is going to fight for the rights of ordinary people if it's not the unions? The only reason the Democrats aren't much, much farther to the right than they already are is because of the unions, because they depend on the unions for tens of millions of dollars, which I sure don't like my dues going for that. I'll tell you, going to the Democratic Party. What a waste. And also for foot soldiers. And I'll tell you, Barack Obama is sitting in the White House now because of the unions, because of the UAW, because of the work that the UAW did in Michigan of driving those two, McCain and what was that half-term governor?
Oh, the one with the new boobs?
She what?
Didn't you see her new tatas?
No.
Oh, yeah.
This is Sarah?
S.P., yeah, she's denying it, but they're looking pretty big and perkier. She's been to Victoria's Secret for the ultra lift up bra because they have quite a variety of those. I'll find the picture for you, Peter.
Okay, well, we'll do that. But that totally threw me off. Oh, yeah, they drove them out of Michigan. The unions drove them out of Michigan, drove the two of them out of Michigan, and beat.
Well, they said they wanted out.
They didn't. Well, that's because they were going to lose so badly.
Yeah.
And the Republicans lost in Pennsylvania and in Ohio because of the unions. And here you've got Bill Clinton talking about using you and manipulating your votes in this Democratic senator. So, Bill, in fact, he sent me as a mass mailing asking for money. And I wrote back across, Bill, you'll never get another penny from me.
I don't think you ever gave him one.
No.
No.
Yeah.
You're right. He's gave him a hard time.
Let's try Jim one more time. Jim, hi, you're on the air. Are you with us? Jim.
Now it sounds like nothing's going on.
The crickets.
Not even any background
Jim,
noise.
You're out of here.
Well, big fail. But yeah. That's okay. You can call us back.
All right. There's open lines. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the money, honey.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliance. And your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. Simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
Oh, yeah. Hi, this is Mark Smyth from Creed.
Hey, everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad. This is Chris.
This is Brian from Cabo.
And you've got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Everything that rocks. 101, The Riff.
Red Defender, thank goodness you're here. That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth.
I'll handle this.
Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid.
He's stopping the asteroid. It's moving away from Earth. You saved us. How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon. It's exploded.
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moon. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight. I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Yeah, stuck all right.
Anything?
Now watch. If you take your palm like this and smack it on the bottom right here, you can get it open pretty easily. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To find out how you can adopt, please visit our website at AdoptUSKids.org or call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
It's been to hell and back. Detroit's premier celebration of bikes, babes, and rock and roll. Motor City Harley-Davidson's Harley Fest 2010. Presented by 101 WRIF. June 19th at Northville Community Park. Join in on the party with The Riff. Broadcasting live starting at 10 a.m. Rock out with live music all day. Check out the vendor village. Enjoy plenty of food and drink. Feast your eyes on some of Detroit's hottest chrome with Best of Bike Show. And more. Plus, don't miss out on the charity ride. Police escorted from Motor City Harley-Davidson to the Harley Fest site. Proceeds benefit the Rainbow Connection. Get all the details at WRIF.com. June 19th at Northville Community Park. 5 Mile and Beck Road in Northville Township. Harley Fest 2010. Presented by Motor City Harley-Davidson. Feel the freedom at the number one dealer in Farmington Hills. From 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. And what gate is that being called?
What? Oh, a boob gate.
Boob gate.
Boob gate, yeah.
Explain it.
Did Sarah Palin get a boob job or not?
Yeah.
The cha-chas were looking pretty big in that picture, but it could have been the white shirt and, you know, they have bras that do amazing things for women.
I'll tell you.
Days.
American politics have come down to this.
To boob gate.
Boob gate.
Really, just because she's involved in it. If she would just go away, we might get back to using our brains.
Brian from Windsor writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We were talking about how oil is the key component of this petrochemical industrial civilization that we have. And talk about getting rid of oil. Actually, it may be the important thing to say would be get rid of it as a fuel.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I mean,
sure.
Even still pumping it, exploring for it, refining it, shipping it, and then what do? Then you got these plastic things. You go, oh, you can recycle it. Well, you can't recycle all of it, and a lot of the stuff you can recycle, you can recycle once only. But anyway, Brian writes in, hello, Peter and Jolene. I'm pretty sure hemp could be used in many of the modern products, which I think would eliminate the need for petroleum. I don't have all the facts on this in front of me, but I'm sure there are people out there who know more about this. Yeah, that actually, a lot of things could be made. And there was a lot of stuff that used to be, what the hell did they call it? Like sort of like cellophane, which I don't even know what the hell that was. I think that was made from some plant
like
substance.
Silicone?
No,
you mean? Okay.
No. Cellophane. There you go.
I'm just still on the boob gate. I'm sorry.
You know, like, what's that stuff when you get, like, a pack of cigarettes, which I don't get?
Cellophane.
Cellophane.
Yeah.
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 What's that made out of?
It's plastic.
The cellophane plant.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, Garrett writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I was thinking about the whole international call thing. We were saying, you know, the ZZ Top song, I'm bad, I'm nationwide. Well, we're international because of the internet. But if you're even somewhere outside of the Detroit area, it costs you a thing. In fact, this is a 313 area code, and I think probably, maybe three-quarters of the audience are in the 248 or 810 area. Code. Anyway, he says, maybe you could network with some of the other radio shows around the world. We in Detroit could maybe listen in to their shows live and call in, and you might get other callers from other countries. Huh. Besides, I don't even know how to go about finding other shows across the world. Maybe this could help. Well,
this is the only one. Shh.
if I need a producer.
Oh. Where is she or he?
All right, let's get down and mention this. I've been mentioning it every week. This is the word. I mean, think of all the words that I can't say on radio, and so many words.
So many that are so effective too when you really feel like it.
Well,
you know.
And then there's other words having to do with racial and gender slurs, that ethnic slurs that could really put people over the edge. But the one that I said that would probably go by most people, not in Europe. I mean, they're a little bit more aware of stuff than we are here. That word is the big A word, austerity.
Oh, yes.
Now, here
that
is something.
That seems to be the word of the moment in the last few weeks on this show, anyway.
Prime Minister David Cameron, he's the new conservative Prime Minister of England, said that Britain's financial situation was, quote, even worse than we thought, and that the country would have to make savage spending cuts to bring its swelling deficit under control. He said, how we deal with these things will affect our economy, our society, indeed our whole way of life. Now, he, I'm not supporting this guy or what he's up to, but he is being at least honest. There is a financial crisis all over the world. Capitalism has really crapped out badly for the vast majority of us. I mean, good part of the time, it's crapped out for probably a good half the world's population anyway. But now it's even, you know, the bad times are eking into the top of the pyramid. But he said, he said that more than 11% of Britain's budget deficit was the largest ever faced by the country in peacetime. So, in other words, they've had deficits this large, but during wartime, and hey, it worked out, they got out of it, but that's not the deal. He says Britain owes more than $1.12 trillion, and 5 years will owe more. Anyway, at the same time, the government risks alienating Britons, particularly workers in the state sector, which Mr. Cameron singled out as an example of public spending run amok.
Mm.
Yeah. And what that means is, because, and this is where the unions are centered, also a lot still in industrial concerns, mining and what have you, that the unions in the public sector, like in the United States and like most countries around the world, Western countries, have been able to, guess what, get a decent middle class living for the people that do the work.
Sounds like the right thing to do.
Yeah, rather than have 90% of all the wealth that is accumulated, produced and accumulated, go to the rich guys, which is the way it's going now. Mr. Cameron, he's the Prime Minister, tried to soften the blow by saying the cuts would not disproportionately affect the vulnerable. That means, I guess, the sick and the real poor.
The poor,
if you believe that, you'll believe I'd like to sell you the London Bridge. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Here's the big thing on the last paragraph. As a cautionary tale, he mentioned Greece, the country of, not, you know, the greasy stuff.
Sure.
Where profligate spending, that means what? Wildly extravagant. That's another word. Profligate means wildly extravagant. Where profligate spending led to a huge budget deficit and a downgrading on financial markets. While Britain's economic position is stronger than Greece's, he said, Greece stands as a warning of what happens to countries that lose their credibility or whose governments pretend that difficult decisions can be avoided, like enforcing austerity. But let's go back to that first sentence. As a cautionary tale, Prime Minister Cameron mentioned Greece, where profligate spending led to a huge budget deficit. So we all know what's going on here. Those greedy workers.
Oh, yeah.
They wrecked the economy of Greece, and they're doing the same thing as, what about profligate earning? What about wildly extravagant earnings?
Mm-hmm.
What about all the rich people of this world that are sitting on trillions of dollars of wealth? And the sentence I'll read every single week, I guess, from the Forbes article, the Forbes magazine article about the world's billionaires, that said many plutocrats, which is a weird word for magazine that's for and about rich people, that means the rich. The plutocrats, last year their wealth had become a billionaire bonanza. This is 2009 they're talking about. Most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year. So, in other words, where he's talking about profligate spending, wildly extravagant spending, or what would you say, salaries, essentially, he means, here where the problem really lies, and that is the vast distribution of wealth to the ultra wealthy. Now, dear old mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, he's back in the saddle again. He hasn't all in 2008. He didn't buy a townhouse. He didn't buy a private jet.
Aww.
And worst of all, he cut back on his household staff.
Oh, I don't know how he did it.
Now, if you had a household staff, say you had a gardener, a cook,
ooh,
a maid and a butler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want all those people up in my business anyway.
Well,
let's say
it would be weird. You would say, even because you're pretty generous, say you'd pay him $50,000 a year. So that's $200,000 in salary. Right?
Uh-huh.
So that's an enormous amount. I mean, if you make $200,000, you would pay these people. If you make $200,000 a year, I think you're in the upper 5%, definitely in the upper 8%. But here's what happened. The stock market bounced back. Remember, the billionaires got richer. Oh, what, you or you know people who lost their job? Oh, you know people whose house or you lost their house? Over the last year, Bloomberg poured at least $500,000 into a trust fund for his ex-wife.
For his ex-wife. Wow.
And he restored.
You don't hear that much.
And in creating jobs, the mayor of New York City restored the domestic staff that he somehow did without, according to his tax return.
Good for you. You got your people back.
He picked up a few extra dollars for his appearance on television shows like Law and Order. Can you imagine this guy actually picks up a check?
No.
I can't. And he pocketed a profitable sum, at least $40,000, from leasing out the horses he keeps on his estate in Wellington, Florida. But here's the deal. As usual, the mayor's tax returns are filed with telling glimpses into the world of a man worth an estimated $18 billion. So he, you know, they're always talking about the deficit problems in New York City and New York State. He could pay off the whole thing and still be a multi-billionaire.
But he never will.
No. The returns show that his payroll taxes on household staff rose to between $250,000 and $500,000. Now, remember I said earlier, if you paid four people $50,000 apiece, you would be paying them $200,000. He pays payroll taxes of up to $500,000. And I forgot what, you know, the FICA tax, I mean, you know, for Social Security and what have you. So I don't know what that would, I don't know, maybe someone can do the math on it. If you're paying payroll taxes of $500,000, kind of some of you small business owners out there, you must know. So, I mean, here is, what is happening in Britain is happening here, except Barack Obama is not going to say it. And you have somebody like, what is this Diddy? There's somebody named Diddy?
P. Diddy.
Oh, P. Diddy.
Yeah, Puff Daddy.
Okay.
Sean Combs.
Okay, I knew that, but I thought this was a different guy, because all this is talking is about Diddy.
That's
Mr. Diddy?
That's who it is. It's just Diddy.
Yeah, that's like Bo Diddley.
Right, but without the L.
I mean, I saw the guy one time. I had dinner with a bunch of rock stars and old R&B stars like Bo Diddley, and I was wondering, what do I say? Mr. Diddley?
Yeah.
I called him Bo.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, he gave his son a Maybach car worth almost $400,000.
$400,000. And he turned 16. Sweet 16. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then he got pissed because I guess Entertainment Tonight was giving him a hard time about saying, you think this is appropriate? I feel the way I raise my children, I don't have to explain to you or anybody because nobody knows the way I raise my children. Well, we know you just gave him a $400,000 car and there's a photograph of it with a big ribbon around it. So,
my gosh.
You're worried, as I know friends of mine are now. I mean, the noose is beginning to tighten more and more on the ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't the jobs that these wonderful corporations send overseas. These are people that have high-paying middle-class and upper-middle-class jobs that are doing more and more cutbacks, for instance. And so the kind of wealth is around where someone can give that kind of money to their 16-year-old son. And thanks to George W. Bush, the taxes on the rich were put in abeyance for a year. And this allowed a Texas pipeline tycoon by the name of Dan L. Duncan.
That sounds like a
a soft-spoken farm boy, yeah, to not pay any taxes when he passed away. And he was worth, what did they say? We're in here, like $8 billion or something like that. The tax effect, now, there is what they call the inheritance tax. It was an estate tax. It was enacted in 1916 when John D. Rockefeller, America's first billionaire, died in 1937. His estate paid 70% of it. 70% of it went to the government. Since then, the rates have fluctuated, but for the first time, the tax has been repealed altogether. That's because the Republicans, the big defenders of ultra wealth, don't want the wealthy people having to, they earned it. You know?
Right.
And you're taxing them twice, once when they made it, and now when they die, it's a death tax. Well, hey,
maybe they could find a happy medium.
Yeah, like maybe raising it to 90%. Something like that.
That's rad, Peter.
Well, they're going crazy trying to say, you know, this is, you know, the Democrats trying to attack, attack the families of the bereaved families of that. It affects about 5,500 families a year. And let's see. The Treasury collected more than $25 billion in estate taxes in 2008. That's good. Let's get rid of that. And then we'll have $25 billion more in the deficit. Dan L. Duncan, he gave to a lot of charities, Houston Zoo, Houston Museum of Science, stuff like that, medical centers. So, you know, he's giving away money, stuff like that. But this guy, he had more than 500 entries in the Safari Club International record book for killing animals.
Oh, geez.
He killed polar bears, rhinoceroses, bighorn sheep, lions, and elephants.
It sounds entertaining. I mean, that just sounds like so much fun to just murder these beautiful animals.
Yeah. So that's why we say eat the rich. Right. Do we? Oh, yeah. This is a call-in talk show, isn't it? 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here is Jim. Jim, are you ready? You're on strike three.
I'm here.
Okay, man. Go ahead.
Holy cow. How you doing, you anti-American people?
What?
My God. How could you hate people so much?
What do you think we...
We love people.
We love people.
We're all about love.
Jim, do you love people that screw you?
And you're still mad at them.
Wait.
Who?
Jim.
Mad at who?
Wait. Jim, do you love people that screw you, that take advantage of you, that lie to you?
I own my own small business, and I screw people all the time.
You screw people all the time?
All the time.
Man, I know. What's the name of your business,
yeah.
Jim?
Yeah, sure, I'll tell you.
Yeah, come on, man. We want to make sure that nobody goes there.
Nobody goes there. How can you live with yourself saying, admittedly, on Detroit radio that you screw people over? What kind of a jerk are you?
Why? For being honest?
For screwing people over.
Because we know small business people that are honest to a fault that
absolutely
would never do anything. Why would you do that?
Why do people on the air?
Why do you screw people?
But just like you do. You're lying to people on the air.
Wait. No.
This is about you,
Jim. In other words, you don't agree with me, or you may think that I'm saying things that are factually incorrect, but we're talking about a real ethical and moral lapse here. We're talking about someone, you, Jim, that violates every precept of religion, of ethics, of morality, and you admit it and say, why shouldn't I admit it? How do you live with yourself?
A little further than that. What I meant was, by owning a small business, I make the lion's share. My workers make the hourly share.
Correct? Yeah, yeah.
That's what I meant. So I meant by that was, you're telling me by that I'm screwing people.
Oh.
That's what I meant by that.
So you have guilt.
Wait.
No, he has guilt about the fact that he makes the money and that his little minions make very little.
What if you were paying $500,000 as your share of payroll tax, how much would be your salary bill be?
You know what? After all my work and after paying all my taxes, as a small business owner, do you know what I make a week?
How much?
$169.
$169? Well, I'll tell you, being in a small business has always been tough, Jim. And I think it's like 60% of them go under in the first 5 years. I mean, it's always been tough. And, of course, in an economy like this, it's getting tougher. So, you know, I don't know what to say to you. Maybe you're in a gas station. Do you own a BP gas station?
Are you at the BP? Are you one of those BP owners?
No. That's terrible. How can I ever defend that?
Okay, well, you've redeemed yourself a little.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Some of the things you say are okay.
Well, wait.
Some of the things that we say are okay. Thank you.
How can you go back and dishonor Ronald Reagan?
Oh, he was the worst president ever.
He was in a big fight with Bush for that honor.
Yeah, true. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it was Reagan politics, Jim, that has screwed all of us, including you.
But come on, man. Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, he was the guy at deregulation. You've got BP Gulf disaster because of Ronald Reagan.
You also have a lot of good things from Ronald Reagan. Come on now.
Name two.
Two. How about letting immigrants into our country? Since you're so socialist.
So we think that's good? Letting illegal immigrants in the country?
We
condone that?
We think Reagan let illegal immigrants into the country? Now, what's all right? So that's one.
That's one.
What's the second good thing he did?
What else did he do? Well, you guys don't like it, so I'll say trickle down. But I know that as a child growing up, I had everything I needed.
I know
what he did that was good, Peter. I can answer this.
What?
The movie Bozo the Monkey, that was.
Well,
you know,
Jim,
that was kind of entertaining.
Did it ever occur to you that because of the distribution of income that he set into motion is the reason you are now making $169 a week for all your hard effort?
You're listening to Nightcall. With Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Why spend more than you have to on your life insurance? Our free service can save you a fortune on your life insurance in just one short phone call. I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. At AccuQuote, we monitor hundreds of top-rated life insurance products to find you the lowest prices. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can protect his family with $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. We even have term life policies that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. AccuQuote makes it easy to find the best values. Just call 800-654-2075. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. How much can you save? Just call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. Call now for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronix Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
time.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronix is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Jolene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our second hour. Jolene Jordan, welcome
Hello.
Back.
Hello, yeah. Thank you.
Couple of great interviews in an hour, and I do two interviews, present them at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, and I record them earlier in the week, and one is that it's going to drive some people up the wall. Jerry Lemke, he's the guy that wrote the book, The Spitting Image, who says all of that stuff about Vietnam vets being spit on when they came back from the Vietnam War is total BS. In fact, I don't want to argue about it anymore. Just go to Google. We talked about that last week, didn't we? Go to Spitting Image.
I think that was a couple weeks ago, but yeah. Whatever. Well, from time to time, we do
Spitting Image, and look at it up on Wikipedia. That's pretty good.
But there's more.
A lot of stuff there, yeah. So then this one, in fact, it says on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, where you can also join our Facebook.com/Night Call, or you can just click on that wonderful. Actually, you want to replace this photograph of you and me, don't you?
In fact, I want you to come ready next week. Actually, do a little quaffing. Actually, your hair always looks the same.
Yeah, it does.
Looks fabulous.
Yeah.
We're going to get a new picture. In fact, when we did our gig for the benefit for the Fifth Estate newspaper.
Oh, that was a good one.
This guy came up to me and he goes, you're Julian. He goes, well, you're way cuter than that picture on there. I thought, God, we got to get a new picture.
Oh, man. You know, it doesn't even look like you.
Well, it was a while ago, and I had kind of Alterna hair, and, you know, my hair's about 10 inches longer than that.
Are we on the air?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're back.
Who cares about my hair?
Yeah, right.
New pictures to come.
So the headline about this week's guest says, did Jane Fonda lose the Vietnam War? Because in this right-wing fantasy
here
world,
we go again.
It was Jane that did it. So the name of the book by Jerry Lemke is Hanoi Jane, War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal. And then the next guy, and this guy got a good, nice southern accent, and he lives out in Salina, Kansas, where it's about 119 all the time during the summer. Stan Cox, he says, we shouldn't be using air conditioning.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, losing our cool, uncomfortable truths about our air-conditioned world, and he describes the environmental and social impact of the desire to always be cool. And in this, I said, you know, I got to tell you, Stan, I bet you haven't convinced anybody. I've never said that to an author.
Unless they don't have central air.
Yeah. But
think of the money we would save, too.
That's it. Well, he talks about that. That using air conditioning in your car reduces your gas mileage by about 20%.
I wonder if that does that with a hybrid. Probably.
Yeah. Let's see, from Jeff, who wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We're talking about people listening all around the country and the world. Hey, Peter and Jolene, love your show. You asked about people listening in foreign countries. Well, I'm not in a foreign country, but I do live in an alternative universe. I'm stuck in the right-wing Republican hellhole known as Indianapolis, surrounded by conservative morons who continue to vote themselves into oblivion.
I'm sorry.
I feel like the lone sane person in this right-wing abyss. We have four righty talk stations spewing their crap 24/7, 365, but not 1 minute of progressive talk.
That's about right.
And Jeff says, if it wasn't for the internet, I'd lose my mind here. I look forward to your show every Sunday night. It helps me retain what's left of my sanity, and for 3 hours I can relax, be entertained and informed, and forget that I'm surrounded by idiots who will eventually finish voting to destroy Indiana and our nation. Keep up the good work. Jeff from downtown GOP hell, Indiana.
Jeff, we're with you, bro. Hang in there.
But Jolene, being from the next state over, is that
Iowa,
right?
Which has gay marriage, but I have to tell you, there are a lot of conservative folks in Iowa, but it's a pretty cool state overall.
Iowa is?
Yes.
The only times I've been there, man, I just put about 12 miles over the speed limit and get through it as fast as I can.
You never stopped at my place.
In where?
In Des Moines.
Des Moines.
When I lived there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was I going to... Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the righties need... They're in such a polemic against reality all the time that they have to keep being told that all these insane things that they believe are real. Because, like, there's this book out now, which I will not give the name of, that is the evidence that Barack Obama has a communist agenda.
Oh,
communist agenda.
Geez. I am so sick of hearing that.
So they can't just, you know what? They just can't say, you know, I don't agree with this policy because I think that its financial implications or social implications or something like that will create more harm than good. They have to, you know, that he's part of this whole communist conspiracy. It sounds like something. What year is this? What century is this? It sounds like the 1950s.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we're always told, of course, that we're in Afghanistan, we, the United States, because we're trying to defeat the Taliban because...
Anyone ever defeated the Taliban?
No, no one.
Thank
ever.
You.
No one has defeated
Why
the Afghan.
Why do we think we can?
Well, I'll tell you who doesn't think we can, and that's President Hamid Karzai. He told, apparently, people that let's see, where is this here?
Peter, for once, he's telling the truth.
Yeah. Underlying the tensions, according to Afghan and Western officials, was something more profound, that Mr. Karzai has lost faith in the Americans and NATO to prevail in Afghanistan. So he's been involved in all sorts of secret negotiations with the Taliban. He says, Mr. Karzai has been pressing to strike his own deal with the Taliban and the country's arch-rival Pakistan. The Taliban's longtime supporter, of course, we give them billions of dollars. But get this, this just in. Remember, we are there for freedom and democracy, freeing women and all that. And, oh, yeah, the United States has just discovered nearly $1 trillion in untapped mineral deposits in Afghanistan. This just came across the wire tonight. Far beyond any previously known reserves and enough to fundamentally alter the Afghan economy and perhaps the Afghan war itself.
We are never getting out of there.
Yeah, well, we're there. We thought it was just for a pipeline for gas and oil. And now the previously unknown deposits, including huge veins of iron, copper, cobalt, gold, and critical industrial metals like lithium are so big and include so many minerals that are essential to modern industry that Afghanistan could eventually be transformed into one of the most important mining centers in the world.
Remember 9 years ago when we gave them, was it 9 years ago, we gave them $40 million for that pipeline?
Yeah.
Look at the numbers now. It started at $40
million. Kathy Kelly from Voices for Creative Nonviolence, who we've interviewed before, she says, as violence escalates and the war prolongs, the question isn't what does the U.S. want. The U.S. now obviously wants all of this. It's what do the people in Afghanistan want? There's real fear of the Taliban, she says, but people ask why the U.S. invaders and their warlord clients should run the country. She says there are an estimated 850 children dying every day in Afghanistan. She says, meanwhile, we're spending $1 million per year just to deploy one soldier. Told about the mineral deposits, General David Petraeus, commander of the United States Central Command, said in an interview on Saturday, there is stunning potential here. There are a lot of ifs, of course, but I think potentially it's hugely significant. So, when you wonder what the war is about, what the sacrifice of a precious few of us are about, that's what it's all about. Maybe, hang on, folks, if you're on hold, and I'll get you in a minute. 313-298-WRIF. This is worth a little read of. Bob Herbert in the Saturday New York Times. There's no good news coming out of the depressing and endless war in Afghanistan, now the longest war in U.S. history. There once was merit to our incursion there, but that was long ago. Now we're just going through the tragic motions, flailing at this and that with no real strategy or decent end in sight. The U.S. doesn't win wars anymore. We just funnel the stressed and underpaid troops in and out of combat zones while showering taxpayer billions on the contractors and giant corporations that view the horrors of war as a heaven-sent bonanza. BP, as we've been told repeatedly recently, is one of the largest suppliers of fuel to the wartime U.S. military. Seven American soldiers were killed in Afghanistan on Monday. Hardly anyone noticed. Few more things. What's happening in Afghanistan is not only tragic, it's embarrassing. The American troops will fight, but the Afghan troops who are supposed to be their allies are a lost cause. The government of President Hamid Karzai is breathtakingly corrupt and incompetent and widely unpopular to boot. Now, as the New York Times' Dexter Filkins is reporting, the erratic Mr. Karzai seems to be giving up hope that the U.S. can prevail in the war and is making nice with the Taliban. There's no overall game plan, no real strategy or coherent goals to guide the fighting of U.S. forces. Just a mind-numbing, soul-chilling, body-destroying slog month after month, year after pointless year. The 18-year-olds fighting and increasingly dying in Afghanistan now were just 9 or 10 years old when the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were attacked in 2001. In the meantime, says Bob Herbert, Americans have zoned out on this war. They don't even want to think about it. They don't want their taxes raised to pay for it, even as they say in a poll after poll, they are worried about budget deficits. The vast majority do not want their sons or daughters anywhere near Afghanistan. Why in the world, he says, should the small percentage of the population that has volunteered for military service shoulder the entire burden of this hapless, endless effort? The truth is that top American officials do not believe the war can be won. Can I say that again? The truth is that top American officials do not believe the war can be won, but do not know how to end it. So we get gibberish about empowering the empowerable, the empowerable Afghan forces, and rebuilding a hopelessly corrupt and incompetent civil society. So what do we do? 313-298-WRIF. Here is Tim in Detroit. Hi, Tim. It's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
We're doing good.
Good. I was wanting to chit-chat about the Vandersloot guy.
The what?
The Vandersloot or Sloot or...
Oh, yeah. The guy that killed the woman in Peru and Natalie Holloway.
And then
Barbados, too?
Yeah.
Aruba.
Sounds like he's going to get less than, like, 15 years.
How so?
They were just saying that he could get 15-35, but he was going to talk about the Holloway girl, and he possibly ended up getting less than 15.
Wow.
Yeah, I've heard about something about a light sentence. Oh.
Yeah, trying to get away. I don't think that's right. I mean,
no.
They should put the idiot under the jail.
Well, he has wealthy parents, extremely wealthy parents.
Does he?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's just, I mean, there is a thing that most other countries, not all other countries, most other countries have lighter penalties here in the United States. But we're talking about a guy that's obviously a serial killer, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, absolutely. I mean, it's one thing. Somebody kills somebody in a fury of anger or even...
He was in a fury of anger because he left and came back and saw her looking at up stories about him and the Natalie Holloway case.
Ooh.
And she...
In the hotel room.
That's what did it?
That's allegedly.
Yeah. She supposedly confronted him about it, and he just went into this crazy rage.
I guess that was a mistake.
Yeah.
What did you actually up here on the board, Tim? You said you wanted to call before the hour ended. The caller Jim that called in that was giving us a hard time said we were...
Oh, yeah.
We hate America.
We hate America. Yeah. What, did you have a comment on that?
Actually, no. I just wanted to talk about...
Okay, well, good. It has you listed wrong, then. I'm sorry. All right, well, thank you for calling. Yeah, will justice be served? Wow. Let's see, here's Sam in Macomb. Hi, Sam, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Peter. I just wanted to talk about the movement in Detroit that you were talking about. I was hoping I could ask for you to repeat that before we hang up here.
The World Social Forum.
Oh, yeah, not the world.
U.S. Social Forum.
But the U.S. Social Forum. There is a World Social Forum, but we're talking about the U.S. Social Forum.
You went to that in Venezuela.
I did.
Yeah. Lucky.
Yeah.
Do you want the website?
Well, I just tuned into the show when you guys were talking about it. I think you guys said something about Heart Plaza.
Well, there's going to be a lot of cultural stuff, you know, bands and the like, but there's going to be theater and what else could you have?
It starts the 22nd.
Yeah, it's June 22nd to 26th. You can go to my website. You use the a computer? Hello?
Are you on?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Not everybody does.
I'm actually on your website right now.
Okay.
So you can find it there. That's the best way.
Yeah. What do you think about that photograph of me and Jalene? Should we get a new one?
No, I think that one's fine.
Yeah. Oh, you're so sweet.
Yeah, how do you
but
know?
But I did want to touch on the guy who called in. I think his name was Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really have to disagree with him, and he is a perfect example of society today. We are so blinded to the truth. I mean, I'm thankful for people like you who broadcast shows like this, because the only way to get this kind of information is from the internet. And then you try to go and show somebody a link a few days later, and guess what? The website's gone, or the video's removed.
Right, or
it's
or
a perfect example of the New World Order. We are living in the New World Order.
Well, one of the things...
There's no way for us to stop it unless we get together and act like humans and not these different races in different countries, you know?
Hey, you know, Sam, you have hit the nail on the proverbial head. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what's important about this United States Social Forum that's going to be happening in downtown Detroit, June 22nd to the 26th. And you can, I mean, people, you know, you're driving or you're half asleep or something like that. If you Google U.S. Social Forum Detroit, you'll get all the information. Or you can go, as Sam is on my site right now, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. And in terms of sources and in terms of sources that will remain there. If you go in the right column of my website, there are all of these news sites, many of which just take from the mainstream media that that lay it all out. I mean, all the information's out there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Sam, check it out. Come on down.
Yeah, and the other other website is USSF2010.org.
That's it. All right.
Right there.
And, boy, I'd like to see a lot of you down there. It's going to be important information, great education, entertaining stuff. And,
oh, yeah.
And I got to tell you, Sam and other people, if you go down there, this could very well be the experience of a lifetime or the beginning of an experience of a lifetime. If you experience mostly life isolated, like Jeff sitting in downtown hell of GOP Indianapolis, suddenly you're with thousands of people, in this case, tens of thousands of people that agree with you. All right.
It
thanks,
feels
Sam.
Good.
Appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, because one of the things, I mean, think about the last, I mean, you can barely call it this because it's all corporate finance, the teabagger movement, you know, heavily corporate finance, all mostly white, older, upscale people. And yet that kind of solidarity that comes out of people addressing problems in numbers is very energizing to them. I mean, they get a free ride from the media, of course. So, as I think I was saying last week, they had like 700 people at a teabagger rally in Nashville, and they had like 1,000 media people there. There's going to be at a minimum 20,000 people at the U.S. Social Forum in downtown Detroit, June 22nd.
Media people.
Yeah. And there's going to be, as they always have, there's going to be an opening march and then a welcoming ceremony on Tuesday, June 22nd at 3 p.m. And there's going to be like demonstrations against water shutoffs for the poor at gas shutoffs there, and addressing the old problem that's never been resolved, the Detroit incinerator that's been spewing out poisons for the last 20 years. There was a big campaign to never let that get sighted, get that, you know, online, and absolutely everything from the health and environmental effects to the cost that was disastrous to Detroit, that the critics of this facility charged at the time, have all come true. So this is going to be an amazing event, and I would heavily encourage people to get involved in it. Or, what did I say earlier? Thatcher Roof.
Right, yeah.
Let's see. Here is Darius in Centerline. Hi, Darius. You're on the air.
How are you doing, Peter?
Good.
You know, last week you were talking, because we were going to talk privately, but that didn't happen yet. But, you know, the thing is, you were acting like you thought I might need some help with pain for migraine.
Yeah.
No, I was able to get rid of my pain pretty much.
Well, that's good.
What did you do? It was a placebo experiment that I didn't plan on. I was going to be doing regular programming for, this was 1982, regular programming for the public station from Wayne State University.
W-A-Y-N.
No, W-D-E-T.
Oh, yeah, the big one, yeah.
Yeah, you know. And so here I am, you know, the man with physician's knowledge, and and I got a hold of some kaffir guts. Now, at that time, it was a pill. Now, it's a rectal suppository. And by the way, trickle-down economics is another name for a urinal, okay? But,
okay.
Well, that's what I say. That's what I say.
It's but, okay. So I've said a lot worse.
Yeah. But I took the kaffir gut, and I had the...
Did you take it orally, or...?
No. This is 1982. Okay. No, it was a pill back then. Please.
Okay, so you did take it orally. I meant your mouth. Now, I wasn't being that bad.
No, but so I took the medication, and immediately I noticed my neurological symptoms were reduced. My head pain was greatly reduced, and that's the kind of thing, like many migraine sufferers, where I would want to commit suicide because it was so bad sometimes.
But why do you say it was a placebo?
I'll tell you how it got that way. Now, I took this the first time I had the migraine attack, you know, because I had to have a regular job at that point. But I felt adverse effects, you know, like the chest tightening and knowing that there was something unnatural in my body.
Well, you sure wasn't Quaaludes?
Well, you know, that's...
headlines.
No, you know what?
That's another day.
Let's just deal with the headlines. Let's just deal with the headlines here.
All right, so what happened was, the next time I had an attack, I did not have the medication with me.
Yeah.
It was even milder, and there was no sign of the drug adverse effects. So I realized that I had been getting these horrible pains since I was seven at least, but that was my first adult attack.
Well, let me say that, in fact, this what you're saying emphasizes what I was saying the other time we spoke about the theories of Dr. Robert Sarno and here in Detroit, Dr. Schubiner, that they ascribe great numbers of ailments that we have, particularly ones having to do with pain, that they're psycho-generated. That is
mind-body
kind of things. And Dr. Howard Schubiner, he's got a website. It's called Your Pain Is Real. YourPainIsReal.com. In fact, he just has a book out. I thought he was going to have a book party, and I was going to interview him about his book and all that, because I mean, it's incredible stuff. He deals with fibromyalgia. We were talking about that last time on the air, Jalene. I was saying that
talked about many ailments.
50, 60 years ago, there were no reported cases of fibromyalgia.
Oh, sure.
Now, there's women, millions of them, and this pain they're suffering is absolutely real, but he treats it through his intervention in our psyche. All right. Thank you, Darius. I'm glad that worked. Thank you for bringing that up. There's some open lines at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Rob in Rochester. Rob, hi. You're on the air.
All right. Thanks, guys. First of all, you know, we've been talking a little bit about war here, and I think the main problem doesn't even lie in the war in Iraq. I think the main problem we need to be focused on is the war on cyber war, which is fighting against hackers overseas and even domestically, trying to tap into, you know, the Pentagon databases, the CIA, NASA. I was watching a segment on 60 Minutes where 1/12 of the CIA database was stolen in 2007, and that news wasn't released until 2010 of this year. I think it was a problem that's been ignored for years now, and it's getting to be a major ordeal where people have actually been able to successfully steal $10 million from large United States banks within a 24-hour period.
Yeah, how do these guys that are, I guess they're the same people that, the same type of genius brains that work for companies, corporations, you know, they might either work for Microsoft or they work for a criminal gang. But I'm always amazed that the kind of resources that, like, a bank or even more so, like the Pentagon would have, and yet these guys can find themselves through the maze of all this cyber code, huh?
Oh, yeah. And it's not always profit motivated either.
You know?
A lot of these guys are looking to plant malicious...
You know, we just lost you. Rob, your voice was starting to crack up and just dropped off. I didn't even do it. All right, sorry about that. From the great city of Detroit, it's Maurice. Maurice, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, Jalene, how you doing?
Good.
Maurice.
See, I got a question for you. In the statement you made about the minerals being in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You know, if you look how blatantly they, 9 years ago when they invaded Afghanistan.
Right.
Do you think they know then what they was, what the mineral resources were?
Yeah, let me just repeat to people what Maurice is talking about, and that is an excellent question. It just came out today, I think today. Let me see the date on this. June 13th, yeah. The U.S. has identified that there is nearly $1 trillion in untapped mineral deposits in Afghanistan, and General David Petraeus, commander of the U.S. Central Command, said this has a stunning potential. So Maurice is asking, do I think that they knew about this in advance and this was actually really what it's all about? Well, I got to tell you, Maurice, I'm probably not very helpful. I don't know. I don't know.
This question, Peter. Peter, question.
Yeah.
The area what they fighting in, the highest concentrated area they fighting in, is that the same area that the deposits of the minerals in?
No. I mean, they're fighting in lots of different places, but now, you know, they're getting ready for this big attack on this city called Kandahar, and that's a big urban area. And could it have as many as 2 million or is it 200,000?
But where is the main body of the natural resources there?
You know what I did? I got this just as I was coming on the air, and all I did, it's like the story's got 5 pages. I have page 1. I almost read you everything that's on. So I don't know where. That's interesting.
Okay, my point is this, Pete. You still there?
I'm with you. I am with you.
My point is this. Wherever the highest concentration of fighting is, you're going to have to clear out the area anyway but come in and do your contract and knocking down stuff. That's probably where the deposits are.
Yeah, I hear you. In fact, someone sent in this. Here, let me say goodnight to you, and then I'll see if I can quickly find this. I've read it before. Steve wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and he didn't have it all here, but he said, don't forget the book, War is a Racket, by Major General Smedley D. Butler, United States Marine Corps retired. And this is the chronicle of a soldier, a major general that went all through the Americas from like 1903 or 4 through I think 1925, making the Central and South America safe for U.S. investments, and that meant killing peasants, overturning governments, and what have you. So, would the United States do this again? Would it be so crass as to invade Afghanistan simply because of its mineral resources? I don't know. I don't think. Let me say this, this was, I would say, what happened, 9/11 was pretty much the excuse. It's little known history that when the United States contacted the government in Kabul that was run by the Taliban in 2001, they said, the Taliban said, you're saying that Osama bin Laden was the planner behind this. And they said, we don't want our territory to be used for launching attacks on other nations. Show us the evidence before we capture him and turn him over, if they could even do it. I don't know if they would have had any more. I don't know if the Afghan government, how could the Afghan government of that time, who was the Taliban, have any greater capacity to capture Osama bin Laden than the United States with all of its power and technology could?
I mean, and mistakes.
Yeah. And, I mean, this was just a total ruse and excuse.
Yeah.
To invade. But I mean, what could have legitimately happened if the proof that's there, I got to say, he's made a public confession, right? Osama bin Laden?
Yeah, he sure has.
Yeah. So we'll take him at his word. And so a police action that was beyond the capacity or perhaps the intent of the Afghan government at that time run by the Taliban, if they were unable to do it, well, then the United States could have gone in there and tried to seek him out. I mean, they Bush and blew it and allowed essentially Osama bin Laden to escape. But the rationale for actually invading Afghanistan is just baloney. I mean, it just doesn't wash. All right, let's we're stuck with this now. Let's see. Here is James. James is in Waterford. Hi, James. You're on the air.
How you doing tonight, Peter?
We're good.
And you too, Joey?
Doing great, thanks.
All right, thank you. Well, I just called in tonight to talk about
You know, I was kind of curious lately. I'm only 20 years old. I was just released from prison. I'm just curious how, you know, the United States manages to act like a rogue nation, and we're, you know, we're allowed to do these things. We're allowed to go persecute in other countries. We invade other countries for resources, you know, with some excuses over them, but we still do it. And we act, you know, we go and stop other nations from invading, and we still have the power to do whatever we need to do.
Yeah, that's the way it goes, essentially.
Yeah.
We don't want other countries to have nuclear weapons, and we have...
we're number one.
10,000. Yeah.
And I just don't understand that. I mean, we run around, and we run around with these fundamentalist values on Christian values, and, you know, we run around and crush people that we don't agree with, and we have these people, you know, we have these countries, we say, you know, they're bad because they're Muslim, and we go in and say something about their religion, and, you know, we're fundamentalists here, and we get away with it because we're a Christian-majority country.
Well, and the last 8 years, 9 years, really, basically what's been happening is that there's been this heightened fear-mongering about the Muslim religion, and these people have been unfairly characterized. There are Muslim extremists. There are extremists everywhere.
One of the things, though, people should realize that the majority of Muslim countries are our allies. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
we went through
Egypt and Jordan and
Saudi Arabia,
Turkey, even though some problems now, Indonesia, the largest largest Muslim nation in the world, and then who isn't? Let's see, Syria and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's it. Is that, am I forgetting anything?
I don't know.
Well, then there's all these other countries up in northern Africa. Well, certainly Libya is not.
Right.
Well, you sound like you should be at the United States Social Forum the week after this.
I'm on my way.
Oh, so you know about it.
Oh, yeah. I just heard about it on your show, actually. I'm really excited for this.
Great.
Yeah. Well,
come on down.
I hope to see you there.
Yeah, well, I'll look for you, James, and Jalene and I will. And it's like I said, there is a fee, and I'm not sure what it is, but a couple of things. There's a lot of public events, and also
a lot of free events around it.
Yeah, I mean, if people, there is reduced rates for youth, for unemployed, and all of that. So no one's going to get turned away because they don't have the do-re-mi. All right, thank you, and I'll look for you. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Look at me, look at Jalene, you can say, hey, there they are. All right, thanks a lot. And I'm going to be doing some public events. I'll tell you about that a little later. On Friday, June 25th.
Yeah?
At a church.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to call and warn.
All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Limescale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer, but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. And you're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything that rocks. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. And welcome back, Jolene. The final segment of our show tonight. And let's see, at 1 o'clock, a couple of interesting interviews. Jerry Lemke is, I'm going to interview him about, did Jane Fonda lose the Vietnam War only in right-wing fantasies? So the book's called Hanoi Jane, War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal. And also Stan Cox, who has written Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World. He says air conditioning is really bad. I mean, I have it out with my wife all the time.
Yeah?
I mean,
about this.
One of the
things,
yeah.
I mean, you two have a thing with the thermometer, I know. Oh, I've spent a lot of time in your house, and it's like, who turned it down? Who turned it up?
Yeah.
I
mean, you know, she's getting, I hope she's not listening, getting this.
She never listens
this
to this
narrow
show.
This narrow band of comfort, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. One of the things that I said earlier was that Night Call was quite possibly the longest running talk show in American radio history. And it was begun in 1970 by Harvey
Marconi.
Well, yeah. Why wasn't me? I didn't start it. But now Jerry wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said he started looking into this a couple of times, and he says, so far I've been able to find one show that seems to be perpetrating a fraud. It says, established in 1973, Sportsman Notebook is the longest-running talk show in the nation. What does this mean? Maybe call this Jamoke.
I don't know.
And interview him. Laughing out loud. LOL. I got Jeffrey Feiger on speed dial. I'll give him a bump in the morning and we'll get to the bottom of this. Try going to Wikipedia and hit the edit buttons under talk radio and talk show. Enter what you know is the best factual info that you know. See if it gets corrected. Well, I don't know what that means, but I'll do it later. But I looked up. It's on WHO. Where is that? Do you know? Is that out your way?
Des Moines.
Iowa?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's 85 years.
One of the
broadcast.
Biggest signals out there.
Yeah. But what they should say is...
And they're a bunch of right-wingers, too.
Yeah. But their show, The Sportsman's Notebook, is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week program. This is only once a week, 3 hours on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what... I don't know how we sort that out. Maybe they should say the longest-running full-time.
How about the longest-running... coolest talk show out there, right here.
Now, Richard writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, who never agrees with anything I say. He writes, now where does this come from? Project Censored. Yeah, projectcensored.org. I don't know. Oh, the tops.
We love Project Censored.
Yeah, the top. Well, usually this is the top 10 censored stories of the year, but this is number 16. No hard evidence connecting bin Laden to 9/11. This was from 2006. It was in the Ithaca, New York Journal. This is way too long. But I will check that out later. But if you, you know, I don't know. I mean, the guy says he did it. Isn't that enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enough for me.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, screw him.
Enough for
me. He's done a lot of other stuff. He's a criminal. Okay, let's move onward. And let's take an, some open lines. 313-298-WRIF. That's our phone number. Here's Pat in Chelsea. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
How you doing?
We're good.
Okay. My question or comment was is that Hamid Karzai used to work for Unocal Oil.
That's right.
Right.
And he was the one that was doing the negotiations with the Taliban to run a pipeline across Afghanistan, but we didn't want to pay that much for it years ago. Is that true? Or?
Yeah, there's a lot of it. You know, the Taliban came to Houston, I believe, to do negotiations, a delegation from the Taliban government in the 90s when Bush was governor, when Bush was governor of Texas, and they had an amicable meeting about, you know, how can we create oil exploitation in your country. And then, of course, under Bush, that the Taliban were given $40 million, and Jolene mentioned that earlier, in American taxpayer money because they had completely eradicated poppy production in their country. Of course, now the United States allows it to continue unabated. So they're
looking the other way.
Yeah, there again. Afghanistan, under our wonderful allies, are now the largest poppy producers, heroin base producers in the world. Yeah.
Just one more comment. Did you read the article on MSN about Pakistan giving support to the Taliban?
Well, that's all over everywhere, of course. Yeah, the service, the Pakistan Secret Service is all about the Taliban, and they would like to see the United States defeated. See, one of the things that happens for the United States expenditure on wars and preparations for war, it doesn't matter whether the United States wins or loses, because it's not like we're fighting the Nazis or loses, because it's not like we're fighting the Nazis or the Japanese and we could wind up being occupied. But what this is that these wars become a rationale for continued spending on the military-industrial complex, right? If we didn't have wars, if we didn't have enemies, if we didn't have a place to expend all this stuff, how could we justify having essentially, what is it, $1 trillion a year, right? So whereas what kind of personal tragedies and sacrifices occur on our side and what kind of destruction and of a country and deaths of civilians occur doesn't even matter to the people that are making out like literally like bandits, because you know they're stealing our money and they're involved in a process that essentially is about death and money.
True.
Okay.
True.
Thank you,
that.
Pat. That's true. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Theo in Detroit. Go ahead, Theo. You're on the air.
Thank you. Happy Sunday to both of you.
Well, thank you.
You too.
Oh, we've made it into Monday.
Yep, now we're into Monday.
Well,
right.
Happy Monday.
About 15 minutes left of the show.
Yeah. Right.
We're glad you're here.
An interesting title of a book, Death and Money.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
But
you Google it. I'll bet it's there.
Yeah, right.
I had called because of two questions. One you just spoke about, and that was the poppy production in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Now, it's a protected crop, but is it owned by the United States?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I mean,
they do benefit.
Yeah. Well, no, we don't even benefit. They're depending on what pronoun you want to use. We or they don't benefit. What it is that they're either it's partially individual farmers and villages that are major poppy producers, and sometimes the whole network. I mean, the individual farmer, he just sells it essentially to these agents. existence of these warlords who were financing, and the warlords are the guys that think that the U.S. is, well, does. They pay these warlords millions of dollars and of our tax dollars, so they're all about us. But on the other hand, they don't want their enterprises interfered with, so that's kind of the devil's deal that the United States has
made. Well, I didn't really mean a positive benefit for the citizens of America. The other question that I have for you is, have you had an opportunity to read the proposed legislation in Lansing about persons who are convicted of felonies not being able to hold public service jobs?
Huh. You mean couldn't be hired by the state or even municipalities?
That's correct. That's correct. It was just approved by the Senate, and it's supposed to go to the House next. But the issue is it's being masked and promoted as a bill against one particular elected official, when in fact it would even affect men who are guilty of child support, missing child support payments, or convicted of child support payments. It is so far-reaching, and I just thought perhaps you might have...
Well, you know, there's any number of states that don't allow people that had felony convictions, even if after they've served their terms, they still cannot vote. I can't imagine why that still is allowed.
Yeah, there are 14 states in that category.
Really?
But it seems that you're being convicted and serving a time twice. Something like double jeopardy, would it be?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But and also, there are states, or at least one state that I know of, Maine, allows inmates to vote.
Inmates?
Yeah.
Oh, now that's interesting.
I think.
Yeah, there are very few states that do.
Yeah.
Grab
the Google. Maybe I'm wrong. All right. Thank you, Theo, as usual.
Thanks, Theo.
You're welcome. Bye. Thanks
for joining us. Well, one of the things we were talking earlier, I was saying, is that with all the problems that unions have, and some of them are problems, to be sure, and that they represent really the sole voice for the average American, whether you like him or don't like him. If you go to any site, well, the best site probably is like the AFL-CIO, individual unions that are really progressive and really good, the UAW, the steelworkers, full disclosure, Jalene and I used to broadcast for the United Auto Workers.
You did.
And
3 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's not my ideal organization, but Bob King coming in, I know Bob.
Yeah, there's a big article in the Freep today.
There was today, and if anything could be changed around by one man, and oftentimes one man, as we've seen by a guy named Barack Obama, trying to change a bureaucratic structure that's already, you know, on its way, is pretty difficult. But
on its way into the
But there's also now a labor movement that is beginning to, an independent labor movement that's beginning to a movement, not just an individual union, taking place in China. And you may have heard about this. We mentioned it last week. They're striking workers at Honda auto parts plants demanding.
They worked that out, though, didn't they?
Well, now they're all the supplier plants all over China are saying, and that's what happened in the 1930s here. And these people, imagine that. They are asking for things like a 24% to 32% wage increase.
Wow.
Now, the role in communist countries, whether it's China or was the way it was in Russia or in Cuba or what have you, they don't represent the interests of the workers, because the line is it's a workers' state, and that's not they don't need to have a combative role. But the state is the employer, and so the workers do need independent representation, and yes, could come into conflict. But what the role of unions in communist countries are is to discipline the workforce. In other words, they're adjunct of the employer, the state. And so now these people are saying, well, wait a minute, you're not keeping us in line anymore, the state approved unions. But we're going to have some independent unions. And apparently it's incredible. Says they've developed a sophisticated democratic organization electing shop stewards to represent them in collective bargaining with management. They're also demanding the right to form a trade union separate from the government-controlled National Federation of Trade Unions, which has long focused on maintaining labor peace for foreign investors. Well, that does not sound like what we want for a union representing us, right? Because they're really representing the interests of the employer. So what's going on here could alter not just China, but one of the ways, one of the reasons that countries like Honda and shoe companies, they're there mm-hmm. is because the wages are so bad.
And Nike.
Yeah. But, some of these companies, there was just one, and boy, the name is Fox Run or something like that. They've had like 8 workers have committed suicide because it's like
Fox
the night.
Fox Run, that's at retirement. You don't mean
well,
that.
Well, then, okay. Yeah, I'm wrong.
But, let's get that right.
But in the 19th century, when the market only controlled working conditions and benefits and what have you, the way the conservatives want to return us to, before actually the government intervened. And, it wasn't that all of a sudden the United States government said, we ought to be nicer to the workforce. We got to stop just representing the interests of the companies, the corporations. I'm talking about here. It was because there were these mass movements all across the country that said, we are human beings. We deserve the right to share in the wealth we're producing. And we're having strikes. We're having general strikes. We're having work actions. We're trying to elect representatives and what have you. And after trying their damnedest to keep people working 12 hours a day, to have no benefits, to work 6 days a week, to have child labor, and on, finally, the movement for change was big enough, and that's what happened. And that's the only way we can do it again, and that's what's happening here.
They needed that song, we're not gonna take it, they needed
right.
a version back
Twisted
then.
Twisted Sister?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. One of the hair bands of the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dee Snider, in fact, I think he still has, he does radio.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
not the guy on, no. Oh, that's Nikki Sixx.
Nikki Sixx is on before us here.
Yeah. From?
Yeah. From Motley Crue.
Motley Crue.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Yep. Our assistant program director is really what? Likes him. She's got a small obsession with Nikki Sixx. I don't blame her.
Let's move on.
Okay.
All right. A couple more calls. Time for it if you want to call in real quickly. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Eli in Pinckney. Eli, hi. You're on the air.
Hey. Hi. I'm on the air right now.
You're on the air right
live.
Now.
You are live.
Obama sucks.
Why do you think?
Just because, I don't know, the whole oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico right now. I mean,
how's he supposed to fix it?
How is he supposed to fix it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to control it somehow, you know what I'm saying?
So what's he supposed to do? Get his wetsuit on and go down there and, it's not like the guy's a scientist. BP's the one who screwed it up. And you can't blame the whole thing on Obama. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, Eli, I have a lot of criticisms of Barack Obama, but he has no capacity to
single-handedly fix this thing.
Let me give Eli a little bit of support. If immediately that he would be doing now. I mean, one thing you got to remember, Eli, the company lied continually about how much oil was being released. So now Obama is saying that there has to be an escrow fund of billions of dollars set aside so that BP doesn't do something like declare bankruptcy and all the billions that they're going to owe the states and all the people and what have you that they've screwed up. But I don't know. You got any? You think any other things that he sucks about?
I mean, I understand it's going to cost BP a lot of money.
Good.
It should.
Good.
I hope it tanks them. No pun intended.
I mean, it had to be a fault too old or something.
Well, one of the things I would say, Eli, like they always say, if the banks are too big to fail, which means we got to bail them out no matter how much they've screwed up and screwed us, that we got to bail them out because if we let them go under, they would take us all under. Well, the same thing. If they don't have a plan that could immediately solve this problem in place before they do anything, they shouldn't be doing it. I mean, I suspect you're
agree with
that.
They had no plan.
Yeah.
In case of disaster, zero.
But I think, go ahead.
If they're going to be, drilling oil, And if there's going to be that much risk, they have to be a little more careful, you know?
Yeah, and they weren't, and they didn't care.
Well, the other thing is, I don't think they can be that careful down there. I mean, how many feet is it? 5,000, 20,000?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. I mean, forget. I mean, that's insane that they've done it that deep. All right, Eli, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think, you know, there is increasingly people, well, the Republicans are trying to say it's Obama's Katrina.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I'm so sick of hearing that. And you know what? I'm just sick of them. I'm going to end the show on that note.
We could do that.
I'm going to go meditate a little bit.
Jade writes to us from the other room. Dee Snider is on the House of Hair on Sunday morning.
House of Hair, that's right. Right here.
Yeah. So the hair bands.
I used to run that show when I first started here. I would come in here, and I want to tell you what. You want to wake up on a Sunday morning, you listen to the House of Hair. You're awake. You don't even need caffeine.
So you were the host before Dee Snider?
No, I ran the board.
Yeah, ran the board. Nobody knows. Come on, take that out.
I ran the show. It's a recorded show. He's not in the studio.
Yeah.
So I pressed the buttons.
Well, let's see.
And now Jade does it.
Yeah. This is, remember somebody wrote, called somebody a jamoke? Or Jamoke? I don't know what
it is. Oh, tell me it's not a racist term.
No.
What is this?
In general, a blue-collar male of specific physical or cultural profile, typically of an East Coast derivation, burly and boisterous, as a term of affection, similar to you big lug, as an epithet rarely rises above the level of exasperation. I just as soon have coffee with a jamoke as an egghead.
An egghead. I need to think about all
Let
this.
Let me see. If it goes right to it, we'll get the... You know these things, they even... it doesn't have the pronunciation.
Well, you know, Peter, maybe we'll work on that for next week. This is really important stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. There's actually one more email as well. It's Richard again who says, former CIA officials admit to faking bin Laden video. Well, I'm going to have to get all of this at another time. All right. One more Sunday before the U.S. Social Forum. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. If you want, Social Forum, what, is that where I get a date? That's what it sounds like.
I'm telling you, most people who are going to be there think alike. If you're single, you may run into the love of your life.
They have enormous parties going on.
Wait a minute. You didn't tell me about that.
Yeah. I mean, big, some of them with DJs, you know.
Really? Will you be my designated driver? Because you're such a lightweight.
I am a lightweight when it comes to drinking.
Okay. That's right.
But anyway, you can go to my website, find out all about it. It is a convergence of tens of thousands of activists that are going to try to figure out what's wrong with this country, make some concrete suggestions, and go after it. It's like the other side of the teabaggers, people that aren't crazy.
The anti-teabaggers.
Yeah, right. But that's not, it ain't an anti-thing.
No, I don't mean negatively. We're just the opposite.
Yeah. It's you're not even going to hear about those folks. It's going to be about how to change America.
That's right.
All right. Well, coming up in just a second, I'm going to be interviewing Jerry Lemke, author of Hanoi Jane, War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal. Describes how Jane Fonda was elevated by the right wing to the cause of the U.S. loss of the Vietnam War. And actually, if you go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and you click on the over in the left column, the name of the book, which is in red, it will take you to Jane Fonda's website.
Ooh.
And also, Stan Cox, author of Losing Our Cool, is going to try to convince us that air conditioning is a bad thing.
I'm staying up. I'm listening.
<All right. laughs> Jalene Jordan, thank you. Jade, thank you
Jade.
For doing it.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, listeners, and for everyone who wrote and called.
And we'll be back next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Rates, policy points, and availability vary by state.
Why spend more than you have to on your life insurance? Our free service can save you a fortune on your life insurance in just one short phone call. I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. At AccuQuote, we monitor hundreds of top-rated life insurance products to find you the lowest prices. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can protect his family with a $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. We even have term life policies that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. AccuQuote makes it easy to find the best values. Just call 800-654-2075. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. How much can you save? Just call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. Call now for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Jeez, Kim. It's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch. The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet? No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
Mm-mm, no.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
101, The Riff.
Look at those numbers.
Woo! Look at those numbers! Yeah! Can you believe we get paid to do this? It's only Monday!
Excited about what you do? Well, pass it on. As a Junior Achievement volunteer, you can bring your enthusiasm to the classroom and give a few kids a little something extra to get excited about, their future. Share a little something of yourself. Be a JA volunteer.
For information on how you can get involved, log on to JA.org.
Red Defender! Thank goodness you're here! That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth!
I'll handle this.
Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid.
He's stopping the asteroid. It's moving away from Earth. You saved us. How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon. It's exploded.
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moon. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight.
I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
It's been to hell and back. Detroit's premier celebration of bikes, bass, and rock and roll. Motor City Harley-Davidson's Harley Fest 2010. Presented by 101WRIF. June 19th at Northville Community Park. Join in on the party with The Riff. Broadcasting live starting at 10 a.m. Rock out with live music all day. Check out the Vendor Village. Enjoy plenty of food and drink. Feast your eyes on some of Detroit's hottest chrome with Best Silk Bike Show. And more. Plus, don't miss out on the charity ride. Police escorted from Motor City Harley-Davidson to the Harley Fest site. Proceeds benefit the Rainbow Connection. Get all the details at WRIF.com. June 19th at Northville Community Park. 5 Mile and Beck Road in Northville Township. Harley Fest 2010. Presented by Motor City Harley-Davidson. Feel the freedom at the number one dealer in Farmington Hills. From 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF. And WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. The Vietnam War, as that recedes from memory, one would think that it would be discarded along with all of what accompanied it. Its history, its anger, the protest, the support our troops part for that war. It stays with us for a lot of good reasons, and we continue to investigate that in order to learn about what is happening in our political and military situations today. Joining me is somebody who I've had the pleasure of interviewing two or three times before, at a minimum, certainly on his last two books, which were CNN's Tailwind Tale, Inside Vietnam's Last Great Myth, which is a story in and of itself. But the one that evoked the most controversy, in fact, when Jalene Jordan and I were doing a nationally syndicated radio show, we had our guest on for like a whole 3 hours, longer than any guest ever. And the book that he'd written at that time that was so controversial was The Spitting Image, Myth, Memory, and the Legacy of Vietnam. And it essentially said that the stories of Vietnam vets being spit upon, or soldiers returning from Vietnam and then were spat upon, were constructions of memory that hadn't actually occurred. And here, back, Jerry Lemke is back with another book which challenges our historic memory, or is it really historic myth? The book is called Hanoi Jane, War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal. And besides being an author, Jerry Lemke is a professor of sociology at the College of the Holy Cross and in Massachusetts. Right, Jerry Lemke, welcome.
Right, good to be with you. Yes, I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester, Mass.
Right.
You say. Looks like, what does it look like? Looks like Worcester or something like that, but but it's, everybody knows it's Worcester.
Yeah, well, some people do.
Another book on Vietnam. Did I hit it, or are there some other reasons why are we revisiting this, particularly since you're not a professor of history or a professor of sociology? What's there that that tweaks your memory?
Is really more about American culture today, the post-Vietnam American culture today, how the war in Vietnam continues to play into our political culture. And you're right that it does. I mean, witness the Richard Blumenthal story of the last couple of weeks, him saying he was a Vietnam veteran when he was really not, and saying that he was spat on when he came home from Vietnam,
yeah,
when he had never gone to Vietnam.
Yeah, even physically assaulted, he said at one point. Yeah.
And the way Vietnam played also in the run-up to the 2003 invasion of Iraq, the whole support the troops, the jingoism, which you made reference to also, is really works against the backdrop that Americans, anti-war activists, were supposedly hostile to Vietnam veterans when they came home from the war. And, of course, kind of a central figure in that is Hanoi Jane, this image of the woman betrayal figure who some people hold responsible for the loss of the war in Vietnam.
I was surprised that Hanoi Jane, and if people that we have a wide range of ages listening to this radio station, so some people weren't even alive during the events of Vietnam. Others, of course, remember. Many, I'm sure, listeners, at least some, actually fought it. And you're a Vietnam vet, right?
Yes, I am, yes.
Yeah, and you were, I didn't realize this, you were in the chaplain corps?
I was a chaplain's assistant, which is not in the chaplain's corps. I was assigned to an artillery unit, and I did, there was a chaplain's assistant school at that time, maybe there still is, and I went through that and then was assigned to a chaplain in Vietnam in 1969.
And did you see combat or the results of combat?
No. The chaplains are non-combatants themselves, and the chaplain's assistant is formally a combatant. We do carry weapons, but the chaplains I worked for wanted to avoid combat as much as I did, so we did.
Yeah. Well, tell us about this. I mean, Hanoi Jane, I mean, I remember, years and years ago, walking into what we called a vet's bar, and all of them were very much opposed to the Vietnam War, thought that they'd been used and abused by the government, lied to, and suddenly there's a big bumper sticker on their wall that says, Jane Fonda, traitor bitch.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, whoa, what's happening here? Where did this come from?
Well, there's a lot of that stuff around. The more popular bumper sticker around here reads, I'm not Fonda Fonda. And a lot of that stuff actually came from Waterbury, Connecticut in 1987 when Jane Fonda and Robert De Niro went there to film Stanley and Iris. Waterbury was used as a setting because it was a factory town, and the story is a factory town-based story. And there was a group of veterans there who did believe that Jane Fonda had betrayed POWs in Vietnam, and they wanted the town not to be used for her filming. And so they mounted quite an opposition to it. They were on national television. They were on the Mort Downey Show, who some of your listeners will remember. And they coined this bumper sticker. They didn't coin Hanoi Jane, but the bumper sticker, I'm not Fonda Fonda, and a lot of other memorabilia that can now be found online.
Mm-hmm. Jerry Lemke, you seemed kind of taken aback when I mentioned that phrase to describe Jane Fonda, but in your book, Hanoi Jane, War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal, isn't there a similar...
There's a lot, yes, and I do, I think, quote that same bumper sticker that you mentioned, because a lot of the phrasing against Fonda is misogynist phrasing. A lot of sexualized imagery is used. There are urinal stickers with her image on those, for example, that some people have seen. So it's the sexual imagery is in design to evoke the image of a female betrayal figure and the supposed animosity of Vietnam veterans for this one in particular, Hanoi Jane.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the cover of your book, with the title of that name, there's this shot of Jane Fonda, very young Jane Fonda,
yep.
As a real sex pot in Barbarella, and then beneath it is the infamous photo of her at a North Vietnamese artillery battery, which is probably the origins of all the vet hostility towards her. And she, of course, has apologized for that.
Yes.
But still, she is sort of an iconographically represents what? I'm not even sure what. I mean, one person can't lose a war. And even if she was like the most horrible, terrible person in the world and did a traitorous thing, why did she loom so large?
Well, the combination of those two photos is really what that's about. I argue in the book that she's despised so strongly, not just for having betrayed the military mission, as some people believe she did, but that she really betrays something more basic, which is the centrality of masculinity in American political culture. Manhood is very wrapped up with military prowess and military service in the United States and in Western culture in general. And a lot of people believe, you know, I'm talking about academic people, writers, journalists believe that the loss of the war in Vietnam was taken as a blow to American manhood, and not just for veterans, not just for people who fought in the war and might feel that way, but that America and America's sense of itself as a military, you know, proficient power really took a blow in Vietnam because of our very sense of our ability to make war, our willingness to go to war, at the core of which lies our sense of ourselves as a nation of strong men and warriors, male warriors.
So the whole complex history, the military strategies, the enormous casualties on the part of the Vietnamese and the Indochinese, the U.S. casualties, all get kind of just distilled down into this one person. So we're not talking about the view of events through some complexity of what reality is, but as I said, really just this icon of it all, which...
Well, not supposedly on this point. I mean, Fonda did go to Hanoi in 1972, and she made radio broadcasts from Hanoi over Radio Hanoi. She was one of many American activists who did that. She was, by that time, 1972, some 350 other Americans had gone, and many of them made radio broadcasts in which they denounced the war, they criticized the war, the conduct of the war. And Fonda, however, is alleged in her broadcast to have encouraged GIs to defect, to go over to the other side, or if not to defect, to desert the military. And according to the people who hold her responsible for the loss of the war, those radio broadcasts demoralized U.S. fighters still in Vietnam. Thing I point out about that is that there were very few left in South Vietnam at that time, and there's no evidence that any Americans ever heard those broadcasts.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, when did you leave the service in the Vietnam era?
I left in February of 1970.
Okay, so you wouldn't have been there
too early.
Yeah,
right. But you know, my experience does bear on that a little bit, because the radio broadcast from Hanoi, of course, went on all the time long before Fonda was there, and supposedly, you know, GIs in Vietnam listened to other Americans broadcasting from Hanoi also. And I, 1969, I have no memory whatsoever even of knowing about broadcasts from Hanoi, much less ever having heard those. One of the ironies is that we did listen to pirate radio in Vietnam, that is radio broadcasts made by other GIs who were anti-war and who were anti-military, and those we heard. But one of the ways in which myths like Hanoi Jane play is that they put in place, you know, a different imagery, and they displace the truth. And the truth on that one is that lots of soldiers in Vietnam by 1969 were opposed to the war themselves and making their own anti-war broadcasts over pirate radio. So people can get a glimpse of that in the film Sir No Sir about the GI anti-war movement. So those are the kind of things that I'm more interested in the book, is how these myths work within popular culture and within political culture.
Terry Lemke is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. He's written Hanoi Jane, War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal. Hanoi Jane, in this case, is what Jane Fonda is called by some veterans. Now, the imagery, though, that you take on also in your book, The Spitting Image, Myth, Memory, and the Legacy of Vietnam, is that there are these valiant soldiers and their families and real good Americans that support our troops regardless of the war, and then there are sort of this amorphous, maybe you could describe in the popular imagery, at least what this is trying to create, that are hostile to the GIs themselves. But that wasn't the case, certainly during the Vietnam era.
There's no record, very, very thin, if any, record at all of anti-war people being hostile to soldiers or to Vietnam veterans. That's the image that Hanoi Jane is supposed to help project. And, of course, Fonda was not active even in the anti-war movement at all until about 1970. And so, you know, she wasn't much of a player at all. And then when she was very, very supportive of GIs and very supportive of veterans and really went out of her way to be helpful, to help end the war, for sure, as many other people, you know, were about at that time, was, you know, the idea of if you support the troops, support the soldiers, help bring them home, help end this war. And that's the kind of role that she was playing at that time.
Also, she, along with Donald Sutherland and other famous people, set up this traveling entertainment troupe called, well, to in its nicest phrase, Free the Army, FTA, which meant something
Free the
else.
Army, or the Army slogan at that time was Fun, Travel, and Adventure, one of their recruiting slogans. And yes, they set up this alternative to the Bob Hope Show, which was a traveling variety show that went around to military bases around the world and had been doing that since World War II. But Fonda, Sutherland, Holly Near, Jules Pfeiffer put together an anti-war troupe to do this, and they performed not on military bases because the military wouldn't allow them on bases, but they performed at nearby off-base sites and drew large audiences of GIs. Fonda was also involved in, your Detroit listeners, you know, would be interested in knowing, she was involved in the Winter Soldier hearings in Detroit in 1970-71, at which Vietnam veterans made testimony about atrocities that they had seen or heard about in Vietnam, and she helped create those kinds of forums for veterans to speak at.
Yeah, and the idea, of course, that anti-war protesters were hostile to GIs just confounds history, which
confounds history and helps. Yes, confounds, distorts, and helps erase the history. Again, the real story is that thousands of guys came home from Vietnam and joined the anti-war movement. Nowadays, most people have forgotten that. Students that I have at Holy Cross College, you know, none of them, even though some of them have fathers or uncles who were in Vietnam, they haven't heard of Vietnam Veterans Against the War. They haven't heard about that. But most of them have heard stories about veterans being spat on, or they've heard stories about Hanoi Jane. The common response I get when I tell story, when I say that I'm working on a book, because students will ask, what are you working on? I say, well, I'm working on a book about Hanoi Jane or Jane Fonda. First response always is, oh yeah, my dad hates Jane Fonda. Or my uncle hates Jane Fonda. And the story that she betrayed POWs in Vietnam, that got into one of my classes a few years ago, and I really begin the book, first chapter, with this story that one of my students, who was an ROTC cadet, came to class one day with an internet message that she had gotten from her ROTC commander that read, yes, Jane Fonda did kill someone. And it was a story that circulates virally on the internet about Fonda going to Hanoi and visiting POWs, being given little pieces of paper that they wanted her to take home to their family members. She gave those little pieces of paper, according to the story, to their guards, who then beat some of the prisoners until three of them died. So my student, who was an ROTC cadet, was understandably, you know, interested in this, concerned about this, and wanting to know if this was true. So it works, you know, not only in popular culture, but the Hanoi Jane image, this icon, this trope works also still within military culture.
But it's not. It wasn't true. She didn't do that.
That story is not true. Not even close to being true. The people quoted in that story, I'm sure many of your listeners have come across that story. The people supposedly who turned their little pieces of paper over to the guards, named in the story, say it didn't happen, and they're not great fans of Jane Fonda.
Well, let me, Jerry, before we run out of time, let me ask you a couple other questions. The book is Hanoi Jane, War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal. It's published by the University of Massachusetts Press, and there will be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. And if you've got questions about this or want to comment, you can, from that site, you can email me, and if Jerry wants, I'll send them on to him. Jerry Lemke.
Oh, yes, sure.
Lemke is the way spell his name. Now, on the face of it, it does appear as though going to North Vietnam at a time when the United States was at war with this country, albeit undeclared and based on a whole set of lies, as we've come to find out, was an egregious act. Like, for instance, if I went to a Taliban-held area right now and sat, and of course, I'd only be aiming at drones now, right? But if I sat at an anti-aircraft battery, the way she did in North Vietnam, people would think this is absolutely, I might as well wind up with, what was the guy, Taliban John?
Taliban John, yeah.
Yeah. So this sounds in many ways, I'm sure, to most listeners as a defense of Jane Fonda.
Context of the times, it was not nearly as interesting as it sounds now. When you and I would tell that story, many, as I said earlier, 350 some Americans had already gone to Hanoi. Many of them had done some of the same things that Fonda did. The sitting on the aircraft piece or standing beside it, it's not really clear, you know, what she was doing there. She was being taken around on a tour is why she was there, and she had the photograph taken, but she wasn't posing, as some people say that she was. And it was really not very interesting to the press at that time. I think you're right. If you went to Afghanistan today, it would probably be of greater interest to the press than Jane Fonda was at that time. It really was not. Her trip did make the news, but it was not a front page story. And her trip made the news because she was reporting on the bombing of U.S. dikes, irrigation dikes in Vietnam at that time. And that's why the news people were interested in her. So the story of the gun and visiting POWs, all of that stuff has become much more important as the years have gone by, which again is one of the earmarks, one of the hallmarks of a myth or a legend.
Well, one of the things that I think people probably don't know is that great sections of the American people, certainly of anti-war activists and many GIs, considered the Nixon administration their enemy and not the Vietnamese people, to the extent that here in Detroit there was a national organization created called the People's Peace Treaty that met with the Vietnamese and declared peace, that thought that the Nixon policies, which were an extension of the Johnson war policies, was absolutely wrong, wound up killing 3 million Vietnamese, Indochinese, and destroyed their country. And so didn't see, I mean, I assume at the end of it all that Jane Fonda did not see the Vietnamese as our enemy.
That's true. That's correct. Certainly by that time. And I think what you're pointing out is that her view was very in step with the view that not only many Americans had at that time, but many prominent Americans had at that time. And, you know, we're quite angry at the Nixon administration for continuing to prosecute the war. So, again, Fonda was not a, you know, not an outstanding figure.
Well, hey, let me, before we're almost out of time, and
sure.
Excuse me for interrupting you, but you wrote a book, well, you say it's actually not about Jane Fonda, it's about Hanoi Jane, which are separate entities. Has Jane Fonda seen this book?
Yes, she has, and she's blogged very favorably about the book. People can find that on her blog. She was on Larry King about a month ago and said some nice things about the book there. So it's not a biography of Jane Fonda. The listeners have to look someplace else for that. It is really a study of a trope, a myth, a legend. It's really a study of Hanoi Jane, much more than it is a study of Jane Fonda.
So in preparation for the book, you did not interview her?
I did not interview her, no. I have talked to her, but actually we talked more about my book, The Spitting Image, that came out in 1998. And when I told her I was working on a new book, she said, "What's it about?" And I said, "Hanoi Jane." And she paused and she said, "So it's not about me."
Well,
I said, "Right." And she smiled and she said she liked that because there are enough books about Jane Fonda, she said.
Well, we had 60 seconds left. I assume that there's probably some people that are going to take me up in my offer to angrily respond to what you said. What do you have anything to say to the Vietnam vets or the descendants of them that aren't convinced by that she was anything other than this horrible person that was one of the big causes of the loss in Vietnam?
Well, I would love to hear from them. I would love to, you know, be able to talk to them, exchange email messages with them. Love to hear their side. There's a lot of stuff here that's historically inconclusive. You know, there's room for debate, discussion, alternative points of view. I'm always inviting people who might have information that I don't have. To get in touch with me and to bring that kind of stuff to my attention. You know, for example, her broadcast, you know, did you hear, you know, your listener, did you hear Jane Fonda broadcast from Hanoi? I haven't found anybody yet, credibly, who says that they heard her. I mean, people who say they heard her in 1968, you know, which is before she made the broadcast. But something like that, I mean, I can never say never.
All right, well, I can give people in fact, we're completely out of time, so I should do this quickly. Yeah. You can write me, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, website is .com, but at calltalkyes@yahoo, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and I will send them along to Jerry Lemke. The book is Hanoi Jane, just published by the University of Massachusetts Press. The subtitle is War, Sex, and Fantasies of Betrayal. A generation later, the controversy and the debate continues, and well, it should. Jerry Lemke, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Good to be with you again.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patent a device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCree from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Kenny Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station. 101 WRIF.
Thank you, and we're back. You know, when it comes to fighting crime, he's never going to roll over. He's McGruff the Crime Dog.
Roll over. You're okay, Joy.
Thanks.
And I got two words to make your neighborhood safer.
Uh-huh.
Coffee cake.
Ah, the old poison coffee cake trick. The crook takes a bite, falls down to the ground.
Oh, it's for your neighbors.
You want to poison your neighbors?
No, never.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, for 25 years, I've been given tips about preventing crime. One of them is to invite people over for a cup of coffee and share the problems you see on your street and what to do about them.
That's great.
You can invite your local police officer to help, too.
I'd come to your doghouse with coffee cake in a safer neighborhood.
You can cut down on crime by not just locking your door, but opening up to your neighbors.
Still, a 10-pound bundt cake dropped on a bad guy's foot could help.
It couldn't hurt. And go on to weprevent.org for other tips could help, too.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, hot weather has returned to Michigan, and most of us turn on the air, right? In our houses, certainly, in our car. Who can imagine driving in a car without air conditioning? I remember seeing some signs from years ago, 50, 60 years ago, and on the entrance to a business, it would say in big letters, air conditioned, because this was new. Everybody didn't have that. I was reading about the American author, Ernest Hemingway, who gave an appearance. He had come back from the Spanish Civil War in 1938, and he was giving a report at New York City's Carnegie Hall, and it indicated that outside at night it was 92 degrees and probably 10 degrees warmer inside, and he had a full house to get a report. Most of us, if we heard, well, the rest doesn't have air conditioning, we wouldn't go, right? Air conditioning is as part of our life as all technology is and immediately becomes taken for granted. But is there any drawbacks to air conditioning on any level? Well, here you go. The book is called Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World and Finding New Ways to Get Through the Summer. And it's from a man who knows, Stan Cox. He previously wrote Sick Planet, Corporate Food and Medicine. I interviewed him about that book in 2008. But the reason that he knows, he lives in Saline, Kansas, where he works with the Land Institute. He's also lived and worked in India in the early 80s and late 90s, so that's a hot place. And he's worked. He worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture for 13 years. As well. His political and environmental writing has appeared in 60 U.S. newspapers, dozens of web publications, and it's a pleasure to welcome him back to the Peter Werby Show. Stan Cox, is it hot in Saline, Kansas right now?
It is. It's
was up to 97 over the weekend, we've had some rain now. It's not quite as hot now.
But, did you have your air on?
No, we have central air in the house we've lived in for 10 years. We turn it on for one day each summer to make sure it's in good working order.
Well, that sounds now, people are probably going, wow, that guy's crazy. Why? I mean, maybe give us the thesis of your book, Losing Our Cool, and why you wouldn't use air conditioning in the midst of almost 100-degree heat.
Well, the sort of headline problem with air conditioning, as you might expect, is the environmental impact through greenhouse emissions, both from the power plants that keep your air conditioner running and from leakage of refrigerants, which are very powerful greenhouse gases. But I knew that if I wrote a book calling for the prohibition of air conditioning, I probably wouldn't get very far, and it wouldn't work anyway. We've built society now for air conditioning, and we can't just go cold turkey, so to speak. But my approach in the book was to try to paint a picture for people of life without as much dependence on air conditioning, and how in a lot of ways it could probably be better.
It's hard for most people to imagine, and I have to say, I'm in a constant fight with my wife, who I swear, as soon as it gets over 73, she wants to put the central air on in our house, and I wind up keeping the windows open in my office, and it's sometimes when it's really hot and I'm driving, because I have sort of minor claustrophobia, I turn the air conditioning on in my car and have all the windows open, so I'm getting both. But, when we have something like we're facing this BP mess, this catastrophe, which we may not have even gotten to the end of how bad it is, there is a single process carried out by a number of corporate entities who have acted irresponsibly. But we're talking about a pretty decentralized function here with air conditioning, aren't we?
Yeah, speaking of the BP disaster, I started wondering, well, if the flow rate that they're sort of estimating, it seems nobody really knows what it is, but sort of an average figure for the rate at which they think oil is coming out of there. I wonder, because I have in the book a lot of stuff about the amount of gasoline and diesel our vehicles use, the excess amount they use to run the air conditioner in addition to what they use to run the car. I wondered, how long would that well have to flow to release enough barrels of oil that could be made into enough gallons of gasoline just to run our vehicle air conditioners for a year? And it turns out it would have to run, that well would have to leak for 49 years to produce that much oil. The air conditioner puts a load on the engine of the car that increases fuel consumption on a kind of typical driving patterns by 20%. And we burn something like 7 billion gallons a year extra to run air conditioning.
Well, Stan Cox, I could imagine listeners, I would try to put myself in their position. They're thinking, listen, my house is facing foreclosure. I don't know whether I'm going to have a job or I lost it. A Detroit Tiger pitcher just got robbed of a perfect game. Who knows what's going to happen in the Middle East and all that. And this guy wants me to swelter in the heat. So, I mean, do you expect to get a very sympathetic ear? You're barely getting it with me, I have to tell you. You know I'm on board.
Well, I've really been surprised in especially in call-in shows or in the comments on the web. There's a much bigger sentiment out there than I expected that air conditioning has. People aren't exactly sure how, but it has had a negative impact on our lives, and I'm certainly in these real severe heat waves. I wouldn't wish it on anybody not to be able to get some relief there. But I think people who, or maybe you're my age or in that area can remember a time when neighborhoods seemed to have a lot more people outside. In fact, it looked, they didn't look like a neutron bomb had hit on a hot or warm summer evening as they do now, where you know, people are not having as much social interaction. They're not sitting on the porch talking to the neighbors and so forth. And I think a lot of the our need for a controlled environment is actually fed by our lack of more social interaction with people.
Yeah, the book is Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World, and Finding New Ways to Get Through the Summer. We'll talk about that, so we're not going to just leave you sweltering here. My guest is the author, Stan Cox, and you can go to losingourcool.com. There'll also be a link on my website, peterwerby.com, as well. Well, part of it is expectation and standards. Prior to the proliferation of air conditioning, people were just hot, and oftentimes during the summer, uncomfortable. They had fans. People would sleep out on their porches. People in the Detroit area would go to this island park in the middle of the Detroit River and sleep on, they'd go sleep on Belle Isle. I mean, take the family, take some mattresses and just go. But now you're right. We have this increasing expectation as everything will be perfect all the time. And that's, I think, the hardest point to get over.
And it goes against a lot of the work in comfort science, which has sort of evolved towards something called the adaptive model of comfort that says that for humans there isn't a fixed range, like 68 to 78 degrees or something like that, that at which people feel comfortable, that it's a sliding scale, and the main thing that determines where your range of comfortable temperatures lies is the range of temperatures you've been experiencing for the past few days or weeks. And so when they find people who have been experiencing high temperatures outdoors and not so cold temperatures in the house or the workplace tend to actually prefer a higher temperature for their comfort. And people who live in live pretty much in a constant air conditioned pipeline from the house to the car to workplace to the supermarket and back, and don't get their body doesn't get the sort of heat training that it needs, their heat sensitivity is a lot higher.
Sure, I can imagine, because one of the things when we hear about temperatures, I remember during the height of the Iraq War, I always looked in the New York Times every day for the temperatures in Baghdad, and they were always 104, 108, and what have you. And I imagine these American soldiers on patrol with all this Kevlar armor and full, you know, boots and helmets and all that, and just how hellish it must have been. But I don't think the Iraqis were moving about quite the same. Now, Stan Cox, you lived and worked in India in the early 1980s and 1990s, and very frequently it is extraordinarily hot there. How do those folks in other places where there at least wasn't air conditioning, how do they deal with it?
Yeah, in fact, I included a chapter in the book on India because it is an interesting case both of how people got through the summer, which is an extremely hot summer, how they did it in the past and how now air conditioning is taking off like crazy. So the city of Mumbai, currently 40% of their electricity consumption is going for air conditioning.
Wow.
Even though it's a very small minority of people that have it. Most people depend very much on the fan. That's one technology that for just about anybody who has electricity, they have electric fans. At least in South Central India where I lived, it's the really high temperatures of 110, 115 occur during the dry season. So the old-fashioned swamp cooler, the evaporative cooler that has been popular for a long time in the Southwest U.S., a lot of people use that if they can afford one.
Well, a lot of it, too, is that we, understandably, want to work the same all the time. And I know sometimes the other argument I have with my wife is during the winter. She's always trying to crank the heat up then. And I'm saying, all you have on is a T-shirt. I have, you know, a long-sleeve turtleneck. I have, a flannel shirt on. I mean, say, come on, you got to dress for the weather. Well, I mean, that's obviously part of it. But the other thing I noticed, so if we're in our house, it without the air conditioning, it does seem pretty hot if it gets up into the 90s. However, if we go to our local park, all of a sudden it's pretty tolerable. So it has to do with what kind of activity either we usually what we're required to do. So trying to do a lot of this in high temperatures without some coolant is pretty difficult.
Right. Yeah. Shade is an amazing cooler, both by blocking the sun and also doing evaporative cooling through the leaves. And people don't really have the opportunity as much to go off to the park when it gets hot because we're working longer hours than we ever have. It used to be that businesses would, during the summer, would shorten their hours, and if it got too hot by noon, would just send everybody home, and nobody was demanding that I've got to go to the discount store and buy something at 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. They knew Wednesday afternoons the shops were closed.
So in a lot of cultures, of course, there's just a slowdown in the hottest part of the afternoon. But it's odd how that there's almost it's almost the siesta is almost derisively referred to rather than envied, right? These 2 and 2 hour lunch periods that hopefully still are part of at least Italian and French life are means that we don't have to be on the go all the time, but modern life, I mean, I'm sure people are saying right along with me as they're listening, they're saying, well, that just doesn't, not part of my circumstances. I got to go, go, go. And I said at the beginning of this program how just maybe half a century ago that when many of our listeners weren't even alive, air conditioning would be advertised as a feature for people to come to a store or to a movie house, say. When did air conditioning really hit big?
Well, you're right. Before World War II, air conditioning was very popular in movie theaters and department stores. And interestingly, in department stores, it was often the bargain basement that, rather than the more upscale upper floors, that was cool, both because it was cheaper to cool a basement and also because they figured they could draw larger crowds in there. But then, and during World War II, interestingly, the federal government put out a ruling saying that large department stores, other commercial uses of comfort air conditioning had to be stopped, and the equipment had to be taken out and taken to military installations where it was needed for the war effort. And they actually did that, not very much, but with a couple of department stores. So at that time, it was such an unusual thing and so valuable, they actually stripped them out of stores to use for the war effort. But it really didn't take off for residential use until the 50s, first with room units, and then later they started building sort of middle-class tract housing, build it for air conditioning, taking away a lot of the kind of hot weather features that older houses had, because big eaves and heavier construction and things like French doors and high ceilings and cross ventilation were expensive. It was cheaper to put air conditioning in it. Then in the later 50s, offices and commercial buildings really started adopting it. And it started, naturally enough, in the southeast and the southwest. But in the past 15 years or so, in a period of time when we doubled our use of electricity for home air conditioning, the biggest growth has been in the Pacific states and New England, which obviously are areas where there's the least amount of hot weather. But it's and I've been talking to a number of people in Canada, and well, y'all are just right there next to Canada, and they I think 80% of homes in Ontario now are air conditioned.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, it strikes me that that as you were indicating, that architecture has a lot to do with this, because Greater Media, the company that owns our stations here in Detroit, they built this wonderful new building, this new great new facility for us a couple of years ago. And can you guess how many windows open?
Probably not.
Zero. Yeah. So there's certainly we have no capacity here to shut off air conditioning, or we would we'd die in here probably.
Right.
It never works right, by the way, but other than that, maybe they finally have adjusted. But in any event, are people thinking in terms, future thinking people, that how you could have a mixed conditioning, so that sometimes it would be natural and sometimes artificial?
Yeah, there's a huge green building movement in the country, and one of the things they have tried to work out is so-called hybrid ventilation systems, where you can combine natural ventilation at some times and air conditioning at others. It's not an easy thing to do, because the moment you open the building in and start with fans and so forth, start drawing in outside air, which contains a lot of humidity often in the summer, you start undoing a lot of the work that air conditioner was doing all day. And the next morning, when it warms up and the air conditioning's turned on, it's got a much bigger job to get that humidity out of the air again. But there are ways to both run air conditioning in so-called economizer mode, where it's able to use more of the outdoor air, and also have it alternate between them. But probably the biggest thing that could be done would be to have buildings where you could open the windows, or you did have a central fan system that would draw outside air in, that could be run longer into the spring or the early summer, and just not turn on the air conditioning as soon, and then turn it off earlier in the fall.
Sure, because it, like right here, there's where I'm broadcasting from, there's no capacity to do that, and I think of the cost. So the machinery, wherever, I don't even know where it is in this building, but there's some, it's a big building, a lot of square footage, so they are pumping hot air or cold air into this building 24/7, 365, right? And the cost must be enormous for the company. But,
right.
You know, we're almost out of time, Stan Cox, and we should. You've mentioned a number of things about how we could, as the subtitle of your book, Losing Our Cool, part of the subtitle is finding new ways to get through the summer. Like I said, I think it's a hard sell for individuals. I mean, we can say, look at what BP did. Here is finally the wake-up call. We've got to get off of this kind of fossil fuel. And you were talking about how fossil fuel use is increased by using air conditioning. conditioning. But as individuals, if I go home and I tell my wife, I'm disconnecting our central air, period, I'm never using it again. I mean, that is not going to affect anything one little bit. It literally is a gesture. I know sometimes gestures can be meaningful. But how do we move out of an air conditioner? There's a book. What was it? Henry Miller, Air Conditioned Nightmare. How do we move out of Stan Cox's and the world's air conditioned nightmare?
Well, I think if people stop... Thorstein Veblen once said that invention is the mother of necessity, and so we have a wonderful invention here that we've come to view as something that we can't live without. But I think if people, instead of just ignoring it, letting it hum away in the background, start looking for opportunities to do without it, and especially in more collective situations like the workplace, to start complaining more when it's, because a lot of people are carrying sweaters and space heaters to work in summer because it's being over chilled.
Sure.
And people need to start talking about to their employees and to each other about alternatives to being refrigerated for months at a time.
Well, Stan Cox, let me look. Oh, we just got about a minute or so left. I think I said Salina, Kansas.
Salina.
Okay.
Yeah.
Forget my Spanish. Salina, Kansas, and a real hot part of town. And you work at an institute called the Land. What is it? Land Institute. Are they following your advice there?
Well, we just built. A good opportunity to say we just built a new research building here and used one technique that does greatly reduce the power used by air conditioning, which is what's called ground source cooling, in which instead of trying to reject the heat into the hot outdoor air, and basically antifreeze is piped through. It absorbs the heat from indoors, is piped deep underground, and is able to shed the heat to the deep soil, which is always about 50 degrees, and come back in. The air conditioner has to run a lot less. And we did fight for and get windows that open as well.
Well, that's great. Stan Cox, I want to thank you for being with me on the Peter Werby Show. The book is Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World and Finding New Ways to Get Through the Summer. It's published by The New Press, and you can go to thenewpress.com. But better yet, go to losingourcool.com. There'll also be a link on my page, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com. Bill McGibbon, author of Earth Making Life on a Tough New Planet, says human beings live for a long time without air conditioning. It's an open question, given our environmental predicament, how long we can live with it. And Stan Cox offers both some sobering facts and some interesting strategies for thinking through a big part of our energy dilemma. Stan Cox, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Peter. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debt for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronix Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronix is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared.